far are you going?
About 30 years.
In this week's episode,
this is going to be our Rogue Star Wars Christmas special. Enjoy. Hey guys, anyone listen to this podcast? I just kind of threw in this audio thing to make a quick announcement, sort of. First of all, this entire episode is unedited, because I'm not going to spend the time editing it, especially with all the time off I'm going to get in the next week or so. So I'm just not going to worry about it. Second of all, there's been some current events that came up past this. We recorded this episode last night on the 27th of December. And due to current events, Carrie Fisher's mom, Debbie Reynolds, passed away today on the 28th of December. So just a bit of an update there to kind of put a time capsule on this episode, and, you know, like it's not already. So I'm kind of in this somber mood about everything that's happened, because I know that's really hard on the Fisher family right now. And I don't blame them at all. I mean, like, her mother was really old, so, like, I didn't think she was going to make it, especially when you found out that she got checked in the hospital at 84 years old. So, it's just kind of a heck of a way to finish out 2016, wouldn't you say? I mean, it's just a year, but it's just, you can also say it's a bad week, too. So, I'm planning on putting this out right at the new year, probably. New Year's Eve is my plan. So if this comes out New Year's Eve, then, well, I did my job right at least. But anyways, enjoy this episode, enjoy what we have to say, and leave a comment, subscribe. Anyways, there's also Anime Cart. I've got promotions and a sidebar thing to check them out, and also Right Stuff should have some holiday sales going on right now too, so check that out also. Alright, now onto the podcast. It's been a fun year. Well, there'll be another fun one left in 2017. So see you guys next year. Well, who wants to officially kick off this episode?
Do you have it recording?
It's been recording for like 10 minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So you got all that Daft nonsense?
Yeah, and your mom's nonsense. Oh. Uh-huh.
It wasn't even my fault for once that the podcast started, that you guys like took a while to actually start, because you guys were doing sound testing.
I knew we were going to be setting up for a while and just like dicking around, so since it's the four of us.
Yeah, well, that's what I tell you guys. It's good to have that warm-up period.
But yeah. Like, said that he has some issue with his internet, so he wouldn't be able to record until next year. I think it's just going to be the four of us.
Oh, Josh?
T.Y.
Oh. Why can't you just get on this phone and call us from outside the train station or whatever he was doing previously?
Outside the trailer park?
You want me to add him?
Sure, I don't give a fuck.
Let's see if he's on.
He said he can't.
T.Y. says a lot of things. T.Y. wants us to add Jae-hoon back to the chat. Did you see that earlier?
Oh, he messaged me about that the other day. I forgot to respond. I told him I would advise him it's a bad idea.
I just ignore him when he asks about that.
He makes a lot of requests.
It's a bad idea.
I mean, I agree with him. Like, he was getting annoyed he messaged me about how annoying Cloud was the other day. And I was like, yeah, I mean, him and JT just exist to suck up oxygen, but if they weren't in the chat, like, the chat would be dead.
Yeah.
It's a double-edged sword.
Yeah, like that's why I was okay with
Cloud listens to the podcast.
Wait, who was
right?
Niv? Was it Niv?
It wasn't Ivy.
Yes.
Yeah, that's why I was okay with him for a bit, because it did act at least he added to the chat because it wasn't just blatant autism, but then he just started talking about how he wanted to, like, molest people or whatever, and that was...
Bang underage girls, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you really want to harbor that. I don't... Zionic gets the Slack chat sub putting it. Good shit.
Alright, well, I'll get this started if you guys are ready.
Okay.
Alright. Welcome to the Anime of Yesteryear podcast, where it's now Star Wars cast. For like the second year or second time we've done this, because, you know, episode 7 came out last year. And this is also in memoriam of the day Carrie Fisher died. So RIP, Princess Leia. No other princess on the big screen is going to be as good as you. Just saying.
I mean, I don't want to get into spoiler. I mean, we probably shouldn't get into spoiler territory this early, but I just want to say, I think it was pretty awesome on Disney's part to think ahead, and they already have a CGI model for Leia, and Carrie Fisher, so they'll have it set up for episode 9, so they don't even need her. Like, it's great she died. One less paycheck for them to put out.
Or they'll give the paycheck to the estate of Carrie Fisher, I would assume. Alright, so I'll just introduce you guys. So we've got...
It was a joke, by the way.
I didn't even hear your joke.
Never mind. What he said was a joke.
Oh. Okay, introductions. VQ, we got Daft, and we got John.
John, what did your mom think of the movie? I think he's still talking to her.
Like, Mom, turn on the vacuum cleaner.
I assume the silence means probably not great.
This is off to a good start.
Oh, yeah. This is off to how we usually do, how it used to be the Cool Kids Club way. God freaking terrible.
Yeah, I think you should follow it's always a good idea to follow the KKK.
I forgot earlier you actually introduced me and Daft incorrectly. You're supposed to introduce us by our full titles of friend of Tune Radio.
I
forgot about those. I don't even know if I still have that document anywhere.
Oh
my god, JT's watching the fucking Big Bang Theory. Of course he is.
Oh god.
Oh. So, John, no, Daph was asking, how did your mom think of the movie?
Well, she seemed very confused by it.
You know, that's what my parents said. They didn't know what was happening.
Yeah. I mean, it is a bit weird that she was like, well, where does this fit in with the other movies? You know, because she hasn't, like, memorized which Death Star this is or whatever, because, you know, that happens... There's three different Death Stars that they've built now because they keep reusing the same plots in Star Wars.
Oh, crap. Yeah, there is three. I mean, like, technically on screen 4, because if you count the end of episode 3 when they start constructing the darn thing,
Death Stars in episode
4. It's the same one.
But, yeah.
And then you got, like, the planet size one in episode 7.
Mm-hmm.
It took my friend, like, 20 minutes to realize into watching Rogue One that this was not, like, set directly after episode 7, and it was actually like a quasi prequel sequel type deal.
Yeah, because before they start the movie, they don't put anything other than a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. There's not like a long scroll of text.
Either. They just went straight to the action, like, oh, you're supposed to know what's happening in this right now.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, it's not really that unreasonable an expectation, you know, for you to do like the barest minimum of research, like into what, you know, what. When is this movie set or whatever?
I mean,
most people just see Star Wars, they just go in. They're not looking into the details.
Yeah. What percentage of the audience do you think went into this thinking that they were going to get a direct sequel to The Force Awakens? I feel like a decent amount of people probably.
You're saying more than half then?
I would say majority.
I think like 5 to 10%, which is still like way too many.
I feel like
still
that's too
way
low.
Too many.
Yeah. I think...
I mean, they probably were running ads every other ad on TV.
There's been so much, you know, publicity for it. I don't know how you could miss, a detail like that unless you're just not even really into Star Wars at all. And in that case, yeah, it's not surprising. That makes perfect sense.
I mean, I didn't
realize that. But
I didn't want to... Go ahead.
If you are the person, you know, that actually wants to see this movie, then I think you would probably know that, as opposed to someone who's just, like, getting dragged along to the movie along with someone else.
I think most people didn't even realize this was a spin-off kind of movie. They thought it was just the next Star Wars.
Because
they've never done something like this before. So
I kind of look at this as, like, if Star Wars was, like, the Gundam series, like, this is, like, one of the OVA tie-ins to, like, the One-Year War.
It's a 0080.
Yeah, or,
I don't think this is
0083 Stardust time. Memories.
Stardust Memories, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Obvious.
That was a joke on Twitter. I think Mike Dent said that or something, and I'm like, crap, I could totally believe that.
I'm glad somebody else already got that out of the way. I didn't want to be the first one to come up with that.
No, because I thought
was
about
that
it.
Something
I'm like,
to
crap,
do with Sword Art Online? I'm confused.
Damn it, Daft. No.
I don't think Rogue One is as complicated as the four different timelines that Gundam has, or the four main timelines.
There's more than four.
Since you said that, the four different timelines is like alternative universes, and then we're talking about Universal Century. And those are
look at the all the expanded universe stuff for Star Wars. You know, it's very complicated too.
Which is all retcon, or was last year. But I guess like if it's any continuity to it, like they'll add it in these movies to make fans happy.
This feels like an extended universe thing, just on film. You know,
yeah.
Like, this should have just been a video game, in my opinion.
No, it's a fan film. It's an expensive fan film from Disney. That's what Rogue One is.
Like, if you want to, I think. Something that we kind of brought up earlier, I was watching the Red Letter Media review of Rogue One, which is, if you want to listen for better analysis of this film, definitely watch their content about it.
Did you watch
The Mr. Plinkett one was pretty decent, too. I think this is actually from the Plinkett one, which is only 7 minutes that they did on Rogue One. But essentially, if you didn't know about Star Wars at all or any of the characters, this movie would kind of fall flat.
Or be a generic sci-fi film.
Yeah, because this stuff is only the Death Star, if it was like a cube or something and didn't have like the Star Wars shit tied into it, you probably would just think it's generic and wouldn't give a fuck. But because it's tied into Star Wars and you have the big Disney machine behind it, people wouldn't give a fuck, but since all that is actually behind it, people enjoy the movie, and like overall I thought the movie was pretty solid.
It's funny you said it was a cube, because then I'm thinking of the Borg cube from those Star Trek movies.
Yeah, I guess like my short summary of Rogue One personally is I had less nitpicks about it than I did after The Force Awakens, but I didn't enjoy it as much as The Force Awakens.
I feel like I like this one more, I think, than Force Awakens. Because Force Awakens, it was kind of those, like, you give it a couple of days and then think about the film and would it still hold up? And Force Awakens was just kind of like, it's been like that for a year for me. And this one, I came out of it like, you know, taking in the context of the film, when it takes place in the timeline, it's really good. And since it's supposed to be adding on to like the events of the original movie 40 years ago, it does make sense. But you can make up any story with that. But like, I think this one kind of works pretty well, and I see it having like maybe a little more merit to that than like Episode 7. But at the same time, like Episode 7 is a better complete story than this one. But I feel like this is just for fanfare, which is why I think this is how the rest of these. Side movies are going to be these Star Wars stories. It's just adding on to stuff.
I don't think Episode 7 was really all that complete either, though, because there's
a lot
about that movie that really needs to be explained by the sequels that I'm sure they included just to set up
I really hope
more
so,
movies.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, I think you could probably see this without having seen the others, and you wouldn't be too confused, because they don't really refer that much to, you know, the events of the other movies. I mean, I guess it's you know, you're assumed to know about the other movies, but it's it's not like the characters are in some way related the way they are in episode 7, where, you know, you have Han Solo's son and you have the original actor showing up a lot, you know, and this, there are just like a handful of cameos of the original characters, and it's mostly new characters. So I think somebody could see this without having seen the other movies and mostly understand it.
Who hasn't seen the other movies?
Well, I mean, like, there are always new people being exposed to Star Wars, you know, like some 8-year-old or whatever that wants to see it because they saw an ad on TV.
Yeah, but you wouldn't show an 8-year-old this fucking movie. Everyone fucking dies at the end.
The parents don't look into that stuff. You know, they took their kids to see Deadpool.
That is true.
Yeah. They saw an ad on TV and they take their kids. You know, that's just the way this stuff works. It's not like they really research it.
I mean, this is why I said this is a fan film. Like, this is basically for people that are well-grounded in knowing what Star Wars is for the past 4 decades or 40 years. And in that context, it makes sense. But, like, to new people, they're going to feel totally lost, especially if they don't really keep up with it or care about Star Wars, as, like, the Star Wars nerds do.
But Darth Vader is in it, so it's the bestestest.
Maybe they should have kept that out of the commercials, because that might have been a little cool to have that be a surprise, but...
they don't do that anymore. They always put the highlights on there.
Most of the trailers just spoil, like, the reveal at this point anyway. Like, they spoil the entire fucking movie.
Honestly, like, I stayed away from looking at these, or tried my best to stay away from looking at the Rogue One trailers, because I remember, like, the new one came out, like, a few weeks ago, and people were telling me about it. I was like, no, I'm not going to see it. I want to come into it being totally surprised and not seeing things in the trailer to get my hopes up and then find out the scene wasn't there. It was only made for the trailer. Because I thought there was something like that for, like, what was it, a TIE fighter on that bridge thing with the girl? And that wasn't in this freaking movie.
Nope.
Yeah, I'd like to see all that stuff maybe cut back into the movie.
Yeah,
on
does she punch DVD the TIE fighter? Does she, like, hop on it? Or what? Like, how do you explain that scene that's just thrown in the trailer? Like, that's messed up.
Well, they did have to do reshoots.
I wish they kept that in there, but oh well.
Yeah, that was one thing that... that was the one thing that I remembered from the trailers that wasn't in it. But then I went back and looked, and there's actually a ton of stuff, and there's a ton of, like, lines and stuff that they cut out. And I don't know what was added that wasn't there before, but it'd be really interesting to see if there's an original cut or something out there. I'd like to see that.
In the review by James and Mike from The Massacre, Mike was saying that he thought the robot was added in, the droid, whatever, in order to make it not as dark. But it seems like the droid is in so many scenes that you kind of would have had to have had it there originally.
I do see some merit to it in that the robot doesn't actually have, like, a moving mouth. So you can just, like, so if they wanted to make him more quippy, like they ended up going with, they could have easily done that. But if they didn't feel like they needed to interject humor all the time like they did, they could have just kind of made him either quiet or just
beep a lot, make a lot of beeping noises.
Yeah.
maybe the droid is not even there when they're filming it and it's just CGI. I don't even know.
I mean,
yeah, that's... question, actually.
I mean, they had actors in this that were entirely CGI, like humans, so I wouldn't put it past it to do a robot, you know?
Okay, like, I noticed, like, off the bat, what was it, Peter Cummings or something? The guy who played Moff Tarkin in the original film?
Peter Cushing.
Peter Cushing,
okay.
You're thinking of, I don't know.
Like, I honestly thought, like, his look of the CGI looked, like, it looked pretty good. Like, you would have to look really, really hard to, like, really tell. And same with, like, young Carrie Fisher's face. But I think, like, having that, like, try to keep to that same look in there, I think it's effective. Yeah, I know. You said Peter Cushing. I heard you more. Chris. Vico, darn it.
That's okay.
That was daft on the chat.
Oh.
I think the CGI was really good, and I didn't have a problem with it. But I guess some people did. But I thought they did it really well. It's not like, well, just they thought that it was like disrespectful or whatever to their, you know, to the. Well,
what, did they seriously expect them to make this movie without CGI? That's stupid.
No, I mean they.
Well,
said
no, it's like the dead tech characters. You know, that's what.
Oh, yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
They shouldn't have written them into the story.
Yeah, because Peter Cushing died like over 30 years ago, and then I was like, "There's no way that guy's still alive. There's no way." And I was like, "Yeah, his." You can tell off the shading a little bit between his face and like the regular actors and like the texture of the faces, but I still thought it looked good. I'm like, well, yeah, he's kind of essential to this story because he's wind up being in charge of the Death Star overall after like the other old white guy died on the database planet or whatever.
It seemed like he had more freckles than the original. Like they made it so detailed to try to make it look like a real person that it ended up looking sort of like someone else, but it still did look like a real person.
Yeah.
But maybe I just couldn't see that amount of detail on my Laserdiscs compared with a, you know, high definition big movie screen. You know, maybe he didn't have freckles on his face and they like went through every, you know, Peter Cushing photograph they could find in highest quality they could do to make him look ultra realistic. I mean,
yeah.
Who knows? But I don't know how they even do that. I mean, there must have been someone reading those lines, but was it someone who looks like Peter Cushing, or was it just some random person? I mean,
I think it was just I think they got some British actor to do it, who I think had theater experience or something.
Why does everyone in this movie have a fake British accent? That's the thing I was wondering about.
You got me.
I think what they had someone stand there, and then they CGI'd the other actor's face onto them. I think that was the same thing they did in Terminator.
Salvation?
Four?
Yeah.
With Arnold?
Yeah, the one with Christian Bale.
Yeah.
And when they had the Arnold show up in the, you know, it was the young Arnold, but it was like his face CGI'd on too.
It looked, yeah, that movie was absolutely awful. But I hated that part, I didn't hate how it looked, at least.
Well, yeah, I remember how that looked when they brought young Arnold in there, but I remember like the scene being very dark, so you couldn't see very well enough detail on the screens. Yeah. It was just sort of like a silhouette outline of like young Arnold's face, and then you just darken the rest.
And he had sunglasses on, I think, too, probably. So that also helps mask it a little bit, too.
I'm not sure if he had sunglasses. Yeah, I don't remember that.
It's been so long.
I think it was just like a naked robot.
Yeah.
You know?
Or top half naked. I do want to bring up something interesting from Rogue One, and I think this might be, like, the parts that I like. I mean, I say this is a fan film because, like, it's strictly being set technology-wise and visually, like it came from the original film and how everything looked then. Like, in terms of, like, the levels, the planes, like, just all these little fine details I kind of noticed that, like, it really fit the visual aesthetic of, like, A New Hope. And I kind of also liked how, like, they go on that desert planet to go see the one that took care of the girl. And, like, there's basically, like, an Imperial garrison occupying the city. So you get to see, like, a day-to-day life thing, you know, very briefly of, like, what it is to be under Imperial rule in that city and how they control and how they operate it. And it kind of
looked pretty okay.
I really dug it. Like, I was just like, it, like, you know, how would that really be? Like, if you're in a city and you see an AT-ST just walking around patrolling, like, it's kind of like, I thought it was pretty cool. And then, like, it just showed that, like, the rebellion group there was, like, basically, like, Taliban soldiers, sort of. So it's got that Middle East feeling. So, like, I guess it's also, like, an image to, like, the American occupation forces in Iraq a decade ago. And except, well, America doesn't have the technology to make big robots yet.
Yeah, there was, like, controversy over people saying that this movie was supposed to be an allegory for 2016 and, you know, that this is supposed to be an anti-Trump movie. And I don't know, maybe this scene's supposed to represent Aleppo or who knows. But
How do they get that out of that? This movie's been in the making long before 2016.
Yeah.
The director made some tweet or something saying a reminder that this movie's about a diverse cast led by a woman fighting against ethnic supremacism or something like that.
Oh,
that's stupid.
It is stupid, yeah.
But, and then there was like a boycott Star Wars was trending for a while from like alt-right people that were upset about this comment.
I don't really think they did that as much to represent all these people as to make a statement as much as to hit all the different demo groups to make all the money.
Right, they've been doing that since long before Trump.
Yeah, and like to be fair, Donnie Yen is pretty fucking awesome in his first fight scene, but then is just totally irrelevant the rest of the movie.
He just kind of like has a repeating thing of the
yeah,
I'm one with the Force is with me, and they put a bag over his head. He's like, are you kidding me? I'm blind. Like, that was actually probably one of the funniest jokes in that movie.
Yeah. Well, that character was pretty useless. So I find it really weird that they, you know, they didn't have him act the way he acts in Star Wars Rebels. I don't know if they're foreshadowing he's going to go crazy or something in later episodes or what, but it felt really strange for them to, you know, have him be moved over from that into this. And otherwise, other than the name and the, you know, the fact that he's blind, I wouldn't have known that it was the same character, because none of the dialogue matches up to the sort of stuff he says, and the voice doesn't sound the same, and just very jarring. If they're going to include someone from another media, why would they have him be totally different? I just found that weird.
Well, yeah, because they do make a couple blatant references to Rebels, so it is kind of surprising. Oh, aren't they including Forrest Whitaker's character in the new season of Rebels? So maybe they are trying to like fill in those gaps, I guess. To kind, I don't know. It is a little odd. How is Star Wars Rebels actually? Have you been watching it?
Yeah, it's good. I don't know. It was kind of awkward the way they ended Clone Wars and then started Rebels, because they had this Darth Maul plot going on in Clone Wars, and they've been sort of continuing it in Rebels. But there was like a comic that they released based on the script from the canceled season of Clone Wars that continued the plot of that, and I guess that's canon, even though supposedly none of the other expanded universe stuff that was released as comics before Disney bought it out was canon. Who knows? But it's all very weird. But they did have Darth Maul, you know, appear, and he blinded the Kanan character. And so, you know, the whole thing about the rule of two, you know, I don't really understand how that works in the post, you know, prequel era, because they've brought back Darth Maul. And I don't know if he's supposed to still be alive during the original movies now, because he hasn't died yet in Rebels. And, you know, then they have the new Sith Lord in The Force Awakens. I don't know if he has any relation to Maul at all, or if it's just they're operating independently, even though the Sith are supposed to be always master and apprentice. I guess the rules in Star Wars are always kind of not really that
consistent.
Yeah. Not really that closely held.
So wait, is this
so,
like
that's
a
what to think about that stuff?
Is this like a Robo Maul or whatever, or a cyborg Darth Maul?
You know, I think he had like spider legs or something, and then they put him back together or something stupid like that. but somehow he survived, and then he teamed up with his brother, and then they killed off the brother in the comic, and have never mentioned him in Rebels. So it's just kind of a mess, because they had to continue that plot, but they did it in sort of an awkward way. But yeah, and then they've started implying like Maul is seducing the main character. I don't want to spoil it too much, but towards the dark side. And I don't know if they're implying that Ezra will eventually become a Sith, or if he will, you know, go with the Jedi instead. But they had a cameo of the spaceship, you said, Daph, from Rebels in this, but I didn't see it. And I know you said you didn't mention it either, but you just read it somewhere, right?
I don't know if it was a spaceship. I know, I know some background line referenced a character. We also seen it. Oh, the thing I referenced earlier was Forrest Whitaker's character. That's
well, I know, but like in the chat or something, you said that they maybe someone else said it, but
yeah,
I thought that someone said that in one of the big spaceship scenes they showed the main craft from Rebels, but There's so much going on in those that it's very easy to miss if that was.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if they did that. I have no idea if they did or not.
Yeah, okay. Because this is such a fan service film. I know in some of the reviews they were like, oh, in this one scene they had this character who appeared in Jabba's palace or in the cantina or something. And he was walking around here, but why would he be on this planet? And people were like nitpicking at the little fan service and saying like they just included it for the sake of including it, and it didn't really have a story reason to be there. And
well, I don't know what
characters specifically they're talking about, but yeah.
Well, I want to know what references they included to the Star Wars Holiday Special in this movie. That's what I care about. Actually, I had a chat with one of my new coworkers who wore a, and he noted he spent $90 on a Stormtrooper's winter sweater, Christmas sweater from the Disney store. And he commented how his dad has a copy of a Star Wars Holiday Special that he recorded on Betamax, which he still had the physical copy of the Betamax. I'm supposed to be getting a DVD rip of that soon. But apparently has the entire thing. No commercials. But oh, I've seen it. It's by far one of the worst things I've ever seen because it bored. Like, I watch a lot of terrible things and I can enjoy them. I can't enjoy the Star Wars Holiday Special because it bores me to tears.
It's hilarious.
It's not hilarious. That's the thing. It's really boring. It goes on forever and doesn't stop. Like, when you think that they're done with the Wookiee scene, you still got 10 more minutes to go.
To take a quote from Mystery Science Theater 3000, and!
Yeah, and that's not good.
Yeah. I was going to, a couple more things I wanted to point out. Like, I noticed in terms of CGI faces, I don't know if it's, like, the original actor or whatnot, but they had the actor or someone that looked like the actor from, the leader of Red Squadron or Red, crap. It was one of the guys, like, in the original film, like, he goes to shoot the proton torpedo where he's just, like, almost there. And he's in this movie, like, leading the Red Squadron or whatever. And I wasn't sure if that actor was still alive or they just CGI'd a voice to make it look. I wasn't sure, but I thought that was really interesting that I was able to pick up on that. And then also, in the credits, I noticed that Lex Lang and Steve Blum were voices or additional voices. So I didn't really pick that up in the movie because I'm curious.
Well, Steve Blum may have potentially voiced his character because he voices one of the main characters in Star Wars Rebels, or maybe he got a role in the movie because of that affiliation. He just takes him back.
Soldiers on Rebels, and probably he appears in this because. I don't know, just as some bit role, you know, but it's not, I don't think his character even has a name in Rebels.
It doesn't even have a name? Doesn't he voice a main fucking character?
Well, maybe he does, but, you know, I'm just thinking of the really distinct Steve Blum voice, where it's just him doing his Tom, or, you know, the usual voice he does for almost every role. He does that for just some Imperial guy that just sits at a monitor and says, "We see the rebels," or, you know, that sort of thing.
Hey, did you hear what they're doing in Sector 8? Like, side talk between stormtroopers.
Okay, yeah, he does Zeb on Rebels, but that character doesn't appear here. That's one of the main characters, yeah, but he does, like, a different voice for that, so I didn't even realize that was him.
I wanted to see more of the additional, like, credits or voices, because I'm pretty sure there's probably other no-name voice actors in this movie other than those two that I was able to instantly just notice on the screen. And I didn't see it in time because it went a little too quickly for me.
I wonder what pointless cameos they included to play stormtroopers and not reveal themselves like they did for Daniel Craig. In The Force Awakens.
Oh, really?
I bet there were probably a bunch of those, yeah.
I didn't know he did that.
Supposedly on Wikipedia, they said that Tom Hardy is supposed to be one of the stormtroopers in episode 8.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that may... I think that got debunked. I'm not sure. I think they were trying to get him to do it. They tried to get Michael Fassbender, I think, to do a stormtrooper cameo in this movie because he was filming Assassin's Creed at a UK studio near where they were filming Rogue One. But I don't think he ended up doing it. I wonder how badly I wonder how the Assassin's Creed movie is doing. TY isn't on, but
I think it's bombing.
I'm sure it's bombing. I'm pretty sure it didn't even make 20 million this weekend.
Oh, well.
I think he posted about it in the chat. Let me see if I can find it. But, I mean, it's not surprising. That...
Under 15 million in 4 days, but it's made... Oh, it came out the 21st, so it's actually made 23 million, but that's fucking brutal.
What's his budget, like 100 million or something?
125, that doesn't include marketing. And yeah. You're supposed to make 4 times your budget to be profitable, essentially. So, get fucked.
Oh, speaking of video game style movies, like, there's some people I know that did a Secret Santa, and we had to write down stuff we wanted. And on that list, I put down the Warcraft movie. Because, like, I want to see the Warcraft movie. I just don't want to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if it's under $1, I will consider it, or two. But, like, the full price at, like, $10, I'm like, no. What's up?
Yeah. I watched it with a couple buddies, one of which has been playing World of Warcraft for a decade. And honestly, like, it's a visually an extremely appealing film. Like, I forget who the director is, David Bowie's son. I forget the name, what he actually goes by. But, like, visually it looked really cool, but the plot was fucking trash. Just, I could not care less. I didn't know who the people were, who the factions were. It went on fucking forever. Like, it was over 2 hours and it felt like 5. So, in short,
that's about how I expected it.
Yeah, I would say, like, yeah, if you get it as a Secret Santa... Or, like, just, like, get it from your library or Redbox or something.
I might just find some of these online streaming sites and watch it on there. I've got one in mind that I use, so I could just do that.
I would say, honestly, even though I generally promote streaming, this is one of a handful of movies where I'd suggest actually try and find a good copy of it. Because literally the only appeal of this movie is because of how good the CGI looks.
Well, I know, like, this... I know this movie did very well in China because there are a bunch of WoW players over there, and, like, they eat up any of that stuff up there.
Isn't that where someone died at an internet cafe playing?
Probably multiple. Warcraft? Hopefully multiple.
There's been more than one World of Warcraft death since that game has came out, especially coming overseas.
Arguably not enough. There should be how many active World of Warcraft players over now? 10 million? Probably about 10 million deaths, and we'll be good.
The funny thing is, I think that the most Blizzard games have the same reception too, and that they say that the plotting is really bad, like the stories aren't good, but the you know, like the cutscenes or whatever are paradoxically really awesome. So it's kind of funny that the movie turned out exactly the same way as the games do. That's what people say about. Like,
it was really appropriate, honestly.
Wait, there's a plot in StarCraft?
Oh, yeah.
I haven't really played those games. Well, then there's also Diablo, too.
The plots are not very well received, especially not the recent entries. I actually gotten criticized pretty heavily, and the guy who writes all the Blizzard games, Chris Metzen, actually stepped down a couple months ago and left the company, and a bunch of people were saying in the comments, like, it's great that he created all these... You know, all these cool universes and stuff, but the stories of these games are really not that good. But they're fun to play, though, so that's what's really important.
Well, let me ask you this. If you compare Blizzard storylines to fighting game storylines, which tells a better story?
Oh, God. Well, I guess at least there is a story in the Blizzard game, so I guess that it wins.
I mean, honestly, like, I got Street Fighter V through the Steam sale, and... They have, like, character story modes, and they have all these, like, little, like, screenshot cutscenes. But I feel like any fighting game with, like, a storyline in it, I just don't care. Like, the Dead or Alive games seem to have like, the dumbest storylines. But, or, I guess it's that, and I want to say Tekken, maybe, but, like, it's just kind of like, I don't really care. It's more about the fighting. Maybe King of Fighters might be the best one, I'm not sure. Well, I don't even know about that.
Yeah, they started doing fighting game stories like serious stuff, like more than just like one screen or whatever after you beat the game, like, but actually doing a whole involved thing with like a bunch of cutscenes and stuff. They started doing that after Mortal Kombat, the reboot, was received really well, and people really liked the story in that, and they thought it was, you know,
I haven't even
really
touched,
clever.
Yeah, I haven't even touched that new Mortal Kombat game.
Yeah, I heard the story in Street Fighter V is just awful. Just terrible. I haven't played it.
I'm just
I heard the story is terrible.
I'm just going through like the character story things and just getting extra costumes, because it's like you select like Ken and you got like four levels you play, or like you fight like three or four people, and then it's like that for the other characters in that game, just to get one extra costume. And it's like, okay, it's more based on online fighting or training or whatever, which is what I expect. Yeah.
Yeah, the single player content in Street Fighter V is supposedly really, really bad. There's no arcade mode, for instance, which is ridiculous, but I guess that's just, you know, they put their priorities into the online stuff, because I guess they would rather make their money on the esports side of it rather than on the casual side of it, of people who just want to like buy a game, pick up and play it and beat it or whatever.
Yeah,
like those people
you
are just
to give me more money.
Yeah, those people are ignored these days, which is really sad. Yeah, that's the state of video games in 2016.
I mean, I honestly, I've got most of the Dead or Alive games, and I mean, again, those are like, they're supposed to have a story, but I barely see it. It's more like, okay, cutscenes with girls in bikinis, or them half naked, or there's that one cutscene from 4 that's like Kasumi as a like a freaking mermaid or something, and there's all these like cheesy songs with it. And it's kind of, it's just laughably funny just to watch those cutscenes from Dead or Alive 4. And those are this, it's based in Dead or Alive Dimensions for the 3DS is basically a straight port of 4 to handheld systems. So you get those same cutscenes. I think. I mean, it might be something different. I don't even know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really weird that they even bother with this whole story mode thing. Because that was never a part of fighting games traditionally. I mean, never a big part of it. And like I said, the single player aspect of it is like totally on the back burner. Because that's, you know, they don't make, like you said, they don't make money that way. So I don't know. It's really weird that they did that. Street Fighter V has been really weird, production.
I'm still trying to get down like all the combat mechanics of Street Fighter V, since it's not just simple blocking and using moves. Like there's like there's counters, and you have to hit like two buttons to do a certain kind of counter. It's like, crap, this is freaking Dead or Alive, but like on a 2D plane. Thank you, Capcom.
Yeah, I think once you get past the like terrible presentation of it, I think the base game is really good, but you know, it's really hard to get past the bad presentation, so it's gonna remain a failure until they make it like free to play or something like Killer Instinct. So Capcom really screwed up.
Well, they've also got like, they have like characters that you have to unlock. Like Guile has to be an unlockable character. Like he's not even a starter, and I'm like, are you freaking serious? Like he's been a starter since like 2.
Right. Well, you have to buy him. You have to buy the DLC.
Well, you can either buy him or level up your character till you get the points to unlock them, and that's including like Akuma or whatever. Where before, like you can unlock these characters, like if you play if you pick a character, and like you play it, like beat the, like other ones a certain way or whatever, then you can get to like Akuma and try unlocking him, or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they're doing the characters like, you know, as DLC, and I don't really like that, but when you consider what the original, you know, how these games used to come out, is that they would come out with, like, Super Street Fighter 2 a year later, and then Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo the year after that, and there would be more characters, more, because you'd have to buy the game over and over again. So I don't really know if this is that much worse, honestly. I think it's better.
Well, you're forgetting about Championship Edition Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo, because it has like an extra character in it or two, or Bison's got a different costume, you have to get this game now, it's $75,
right? Yeah. So I think this is better.
Shame on you guys, don't you want to support the video game industry? Don't you want your
that's
VQ, video game
that
titles
is, that is VQ's forte. I am an anime fan.
Yeah, I guess so. No, I don't want, you know, it is hard because it puts you in a position where you're kind of like defending something that's really substandard just because you don't want this whole genre to die off again. You guys might not know this, but fighting games pretty much died at the end of the 90s.
Yeah.
And they stayed dead for a long time and just started to come back again recently. So it seems like a kind of precarious situation that they're in where I feel like that could happen again real, real easily. Even so I don't want it to fail, even if it is substandard.
Yeah, well, even during the dead times, like, there was a good amount of, like, fighting games that came out, like, in the early 2000s. Like, I freaking love Capcom versus SNK2.
Yeah.
I mean, they kept making the King of Fighter games for, like, the early 2000s.
Yeah.
I think really up to, like, 2002 or whatever. And then they had, like, King of Fighters Maximum Impact, the 3D one, which, honestly, I thought that was an actually pretty good game, from what I remember. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the King Fighters kept going strong, and, you know, all the, like, kind of less popular series kept going, but, like, it wasn't a big deal anymore, you know, kind of just like a, not really a fad type of a thing, but, you know, certain styles of games kind of go in and out of, you know, popularity, I guess, and this is definitely one of them. So, you know, hopefully that doesn't happen again, but you never know.
I guess we'll see how these companies handle it. I think we put John to sleep. He hasn't said anything in like 10 minutes.
He's been too busy playing. What did he get? Paper Mario.
I thought he got the new Pokemon game.
I thought he said he got Paper Mario too. I can't remember. Oh, I'll give my short 3DS review. I picked up a new 3DS XL because Pokemon Sun came out, and all my friends got Pokemon Sun and Moon, and I succumbed to peer pressure. And I gotta say, I'm pretty impressed with how sweet the 3D looks on the Nintendo 3DS. Like, I only have 4 games of a 3DS XL. Pokemon barely even has 3D in it, if at all. I have yet to see any 3D in it. But playing, like, Animal Crossing and Smash, the 3D actually looks really cool, and I'm impressed with how well it works. But I guess I never owned a earlier 3DS model, but I've been really impressed with this handheld so far.
Well, let me ask you guys something. Do we have anything more to say on Star Wars before we talk about other stuff? Since that's what
Star Wars?
Doing.
Yeah. What's Star Wars?
There was a lot of things I wanted to say, but we kind of moved on, so it's okay.
I kind of got the big stuff out of the way. So, like, I talked about the stuff that impressed me and, like, how it visually looked. And they didn't do some bullcrap where it's like, oh, here's C-3PO with, like, a Gatling gun to his arm or something. He's going to go on the
Data planet. They shoehorned him in, though.
They
that
did,
was my
but
problem
like
with this movie, they did one too many winking nods. It was a little bit too much,
even
for me.
Even
like,
at the
end, we need them like walking in the fucking Imperial City and have them run into like a couple of the assholes that Han Solo runs into in the cantina? Like, do we need that?
Well, the thing is that I don't know if they'll do other movies set in this timeline again. So, like, you better, you know, put as much Darth Vader in this as possible, you know, because you may
that's a different piece. I don't hate that they did like references, because obviously this basically wouldn't exist without A New Hope. But I think they just did one too many things. Like, there's one thing when you have Darth Vader actually coming in and interacting with the plot, and there's another where you just have C-3PO say some stupid one-liner with R2-D2 beep boop.
They forgot us again this time, R2 beep boop boop beep beep boop.
Stupid. Yeah, they did one too many echoes.
You did you make Darth Vader making a joke there? I hope you don't choke on your ambition as he's choking him. Like, that was kind of cheesy for him. I would think Anakin would be too good to make
I
a
honestly
joke
like that. I mean, honestly, it's just kind of like that was kind of, I thought it was sort of a badass line, to be honest.
I was okay with it. Honestly, though, I was not impressed with his costume early on. Like, until like the final scene that he appears in, I was kind of really down on the fact that they had Darth Vader show up, because I was just kind of like, we just kind of brought him in to show up for 3 minutes and just like exist. I thought the costume looked really bad, especially with like the helmet, just like the like neck part. It just stood out so much to me. I don't know if I just noticed that.
I thought the chest unit thing was
I didn't even notice. I mean, honestly, like, I was like, oh, it's the same Vader costume. I didn't really just, I didn't focus on it so much like you did.
Maybe it's just because I saw it in IMAX 3D, so maybe it just stood out more to me. I guess
the fine details show out in IMAX 3D.
I gotta say, I was pretty impressed. I only went to IMAX 3D because my friend wanted to, who drove over an hour to go see it, wanted to see it in IMAX, and it was also 20 minutes away from me, so I was like, sure, why not? But I have to say, the IMAX 3D does make a huge fucking difference. I was pretty impressed with it. But yeah, I don't know. I do have to say, like, the last scene with Vader is so dope.
Yeah, that was awesome.
So dope. That is blatant fan fiction at its finest, and I don't even care because it was so sweet.
I just imagine what it would have been like to go see that at like a midnight showing or something, but people were like screaming during that. That was really awesome.
I went 10 p.m. on the first Friday, and my crowd was pretty. They weren't that reactionary, honestly. Like, I mean, they laughed at the robot, but like, I only heard like one person be like, oh, it's R2-D2. Like, I only heard like one person that was like that, you know?
Oh, mine was silent, but I went on a weekday.
So. I went Christmas Eve, and like, we got our, like, I got tickets early for me and Dory, and then my parents got their tickets early, because I didn't know what kind of crowd to expect, and we went to like a 7 o'clock showing, and it was like almost empty. But I guess that makes sense because it's Christmas Eve and people were with family and instead of seeing Star Wars. But at the same time, like, we had some pretty good seats and it was really quiet in there so we could actually enjoy it.
Yeah, there were very, very few people when I went.
And I went today the first showing I tried to go to was sold out, so I had to go to a different theater.
How was there a sold out afternoon showing? I just think that's crazy.
It was 11 in the morning.
How is there sold out 11 a.m. screening?
It's because the kids out in a populated area, unlike New Hampshire.
And it's kids out on Christmas break. So.
Oh shit! Yeah, that's right.
They're, yeah,
still a sold out show at 11 a.m. is pretty impressive.
Regardless, for you, I tried to see Avengers like 10 days or something like this after it came out, you know, and it was sold out on like a Monday or Tuesday morning.
Wow!
And so that's just the way it is in Phoenix. Half the time I go, it's sold out. I need to pre-order more, but I don't. But yeah, so then I went to the second showing, and there was like no reaction there when the characters died or when Leia showed up or anything. It was just totally silent the whole time. Nobody
Can we discuss how Disney actually had the balls to do what it did? Like, I'm still amazed they actually let that happen.
What kill off the characters?
That, like, everyone got obliterated.
Oh, right.
Well, I mean, the whole mission of this was, they weren't supposed to come back after all. It's a suicide mission.
They could have had the main characters hide in, like, a nuclear holocaust-proof refrigerator.
Or, like, a ship comes in, I was expecting, like, a ship to come up on the beach and rescue, like, the girl and the guy at the last minute. And, like, oh, we gotta get out of here now. And that didn't happen. And so, like... But at the same time, I was expecting this because it's like, you know, they literally risked their lives to, you know, send that data off about the Death Star, and that's
just
what they did.
It's just because that like makes sense doesn't mean that's what they would do, because like they could have tried to like spin this off into like an animated show or like another line or something or other. Because obviously the reception's pretty good, but they aren't doing that, which is pretty great.
I'm actually kind of glad that like they're on the beach and they didn't do that. The two of them didn't start getting it on because there was like no romance between them in the first place. Like they held hands, but that's like, and they held each other like in the last moments alive, which is kind of like a human thing of like comfort. But like there wasn't like anything romantic between the two. It was kind of like, here's a mission, we need to get it done. And that's it. Like they didn't even like try to shoehorn that in. Which honestly, like I thought that was going to happen, and it didn't happen. So I kind of give it that's like the kind of the positive thing for me on that. It was like they didn't shoehorn like a love or some sort of love plot between those two characters.
I feel like they needed something more for the characters because it's such a cold film that I personally didn't really like any of the characters.
Can you guys name a character other than Jyn Erso and the characters that appeared in Star Wars Rebels?
I was trying to, but like their names are all too similar, and the way they talked, it was like they all had kind of a thick accent for some reason. They
Daft, like, I am bad with names. Like, that's not even fair for me to try to think of something like that.
Yeah.
But like, I'm stealing that bit from the Red Letter Media like guys because they did that with the prequels, but their names aren't, they're just not that memorable. Like, the point is, if you can't remember their name, then they aren't a memorable character.
Right, people and mock the prequels characters, but everyone knows Jar Jar Binks' name. Everyone knows his personality. You can't say that about this movie. Like, nobody knows any of the characters' names. I've noticed that in all the reviews that I've seen.
Well, Jar Jar's got quite a personality. I mean, he definitely shows it through the movie.
There's also, many characters, and unfortunately, I think that some people kind of got... go ahead. Just talk about something else.
Actually, one thing that I'm surprised I haven't seen that many think pieces on yet, or I guess that commentary, like, a lot of people are complaining at The Force Awakens that, Rey was like a Mary Sue, and like, she just was like kind of this, she was just too OP and wasn't a good
character.
That's
how I felt.
But Jyn Erso is like way worse. Like, her backstory does not cover it at all. Like, They don't even show her backstory. They just vaguely hint she was hanging with Forrest Whitaker, and like her parents were like when she was like five, she got taken away from her parents. But that's it. Like, how?
Why did she have
like
a stormtrooper doll skills? When she went into the bunker? Doesn't she hate the Empire?
Yeah, that's a good point.
She's
been raised by rebels, and they buy her a stormtrooper doll.
Honey, this is all the money we got for a doll. This is all they have, so. It's either a doll or no doll.
But yeah, but I'm surprised people aren't complaining about her character more. Maybe it's just because everyone got exhausted after talking about Rey. Maybe it's because she didn't wield the lightsaber. But I'm surprised there aren't more people complaining about that.
Well, John, what if she was practicing like Force Voodoo and was like sticking needles in the doll? To take her frustration and anger out on the Empire. Like, she's over there beating the crap out of it. It's like a therapy anger.
She stole plans from the Stormtrooper doll. That's all she did. She'd come up with these fake war machines, and she would steal the plans. Or she'd, like, have the Stormtrooper guarding her dad's, like, various, like, plans. And she would just, like, kill a Stormtrooper and take the plans
back. Oh, to keep the Stormtrooper silent so he doesn't leak information to the actual Stormtroopers.
Yeah.
The character that I thought was Kanan, I looked it up while you guys were talking about Street Fighter, and it turns out it's a totally different blind Jedi, so I was wrong about that. But I saw that in another review. Someone referred to that character as Kanan, so I thought it was Kanan from Rebels. But no, they're just two different blind Jedi from like within a few years of each other.
So that begs the question, like, how many blind Jedi are out there?
Yeah, good question. I guess when you can see the things with the Force, you don't need.
Yeah, you don't really need eyes.
Do midichlorians make you go blind? Are all blind people actually Jedi's? I'm a connect the dots guy. So
I could give you like blind people could be like more wise or like sages on this in a realm of a reality, but like as Jedi, I'm not too sure about that.
It's like that guy from Daredevil that's, his master that's blind.
Oh, I hate that guy. Fuck.
I hate
so
that
stupid.
Movie. No, I actually...
I just don't think it's needed.
I fell asleep to Daredevil. Somebody in high school put that on a school trip once in our bus. I remember the very beginning up to, like, the subway fight, and then I woke up and it was, like, the bullseye guy hitting a fly with a needle. That's all I remember. Yeah. Well, I didn't repress it. I fell asleep through it. It was a sleep-induced coma. It's a great sleep aid.
Actually, one detail that I forgot to mention about Rogue One is I really appreciate, as a huge fan of Clerks, that basically this entire movie hinges on the actions of an independent contractor. Yeah, Jyn's father is just like he's not part of the
Empire
like, Sith or shit.
Yeah.
Well, he kind of was. I mean,
well, but yeah, but he left, and then he was kind of dragged in, and then he dragged all these other people got dragged in.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, and then they also like kill off the other scientists, so like you got to wonder if, I mean, do you wonder like if they're actually working for the Empire, or is it just a subcontractor like science lab that or group that's like out or engineers or something that's
yeah they probably just plan. They just work for 9 to 5. They afterwards they go take their spaceship back to whatever of like that town in the beginning where you see the baboon like ass face dude, and they just go and they just like go hang with their family and just like talk like normal working stiffs. And but instead like the rebels just destroyed the Death Star and killed thousands upon thousands of innocent contractors. And it's just deplorable.
Well, I mean, I would imagine the contractors got out of this Death Star and probably went to work on the other one because, like, this movie starts, like, right when they're like, okay, we're starting a test. There's, like, there's like, a few things here and there. I guess I'm thinking of, like, since you're quoting Clerks, like, the plumbers, the electricians and stuff like that, like, a huge amount of manpower. I think they all left to go work on the other Death Star because, I mean, essentially there's another one being built at the same time as this one has been completed.
Well, they were still doing the final tweaks on it and stuff, so I'm sure there were quite a few there. Think of how much manpower is needed for the Death Star. So even a handful of people working on the Death Star, still probably 100,000 contractors.
Yeah. But I would imagine, like, I think the construction is handled outside, but then you got, like, the actual Imperial, like, forces handling all, like, the final checks and stuff. Because basically, like, the guy in the white, like, Imperial thing and Moff Tarkin are just, like, the general supervisors of the whole Death Star plans and have been for who knows how long or how many years.
Well, and this movie makes it even clearer that, you know, the people who are working on this may not even be doing it of their own free will and might be getting coerced or whatever into doing it, so they really just play into that whole argument of
I don't believe if they work 9 to 5. It's more like 9 at night till maybe 5 in the morning. So or 9 a.m.
I think
5
by contractor death means slave.
Contractor slave. What's the difference?
Well, contractors, I think they set their own rates, but I mean, I guess in the Empire, when you control everything, it's like no, you don't. We control whatever those rates
are. Well, Jyn Erso's dad set his own rate. His rate was his life. He got to keep his life if he cooperated. So that's setting a price.
Oh, man. I don't know. We got anything else to say? Or what's our... On a scale of 1 to 5, how do we rate this movie?
I'd say like a 3.
I give it 3.75 out of 5 Jar Jar Goofies.
I guess 4. I don't know. I haven't thought about it, but I guess 4.
I think I'm on like the 3.75 too. I mean, I actually really enjoy this movie. And I think the parts that like I explained are probably the stuff that really stuck out to me is what I enjoyed the most. And
yeah, I mean, it had really good action. I just can't give it really above average just because the characters are kind of weak. But
yeah, I guess for me, it's
what it is. It's more of an action war movie than a typical Star Wars movie. So it's not really going to have like a major character arc. Or
yeah, I mean, the purpose of this was them to get the mission across. Those characters weren't meant to last for another movie or to be in anything else. So it's them getting it done, which is basically like a war movie. Like, you know, there might be a couple survivors out of it, but the rest of them are there to do a job and do it the best they can to succeed. Otherwise, like, everyone else is doomed. So maybe that's probably why I liked it so much.
It was pretty eerie, you know, seeing it about 10 minutes after I found out Leia, the real actress, had died. You know, just to see her as a CGI younger version of herself.
Did you know that cameo at the end?
Oh, well, I knew it was going to happen, and I had even seen screenshots online. But, it was still like, you know, you see some news that somebody has died, and then you see, like, a corporation make a CGI version of her trying to like reconstruct her so that they can keep using her in their movies forever, and it's just like I can't say I'm really a big fan of that. I know that they had to do it for some of these characters because
yeah,
or dead. But, you know, it's just like it sets a really weird precedent where, you know, what if they tried to do that for someone who's alive who won't agree to a role? They want someone who looks a certain way, and like they can't get that person to do it. Are they just going to model like a CGI model based on that person and then have someone else voice it? Or, you know, like
I think it's pretty awesome. Kind of things we don't need new actors.
And it's just another thing that you can replace people with robots, and it's just kind of unbelievable what kind of jobs can be taken. You know?
I guess I'm just imagining you come in a theater and just like, huh? I guess like the Carrie Fisher, you know, the CGI model didn't look too bad. I wonder how she'll look out in the next movie or the other movies that'd be coming out. What the?
Well, the I think the other alternative is to recast them and try and do some kind of thing like they did in Back to the Future 2, where they just like try to, I don't know if you remember that, they just tried to obscure this character's appearance as much as possible, and they had him like hang upside down from the ceiling.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Stuff, so you didn't get a good look at his face, and it was just.
Yeah, it was so the older.
I think CGI is way better than that, I think.
Which character is this?
These are the, I mean, the future. Dad, yeah, the future, which is basically they all play the same role, but it's Marty McFly, like, you know, 30 years in the future. But like, yeah, like Vicky was saying, like they didn't really focus too much on the face, and like they had him like do stupid stuff, but they put up like a lot of makeup to make them over. But it's the same actors; they didn't get anybody else different because it has to be them in the future.
Like with the 20th anniversary of Doctor Who, they just had a different character, a different actor play the first Doctor. Like they can do that kind of thing, I guess, because they own the character, and so they can just recast them and try to find a lookalike and. That sort of thing has happened before. It's just a new frontier when they can do it with a computer instead of actually finding someone who looks and sounds like that actor. So
yeah,
it's just a weird new thing.
To replace them with another actor. Let's bring their like CGI animated corpse to the screen instead.
Right. Well, I mean, they could have easily found a lookalike. They did that for like stunt scenes and stuff. You know, like why did they end up doing it this way?
It was another actor in Back to the Future, though. That's what I'm talking about. The actor wouldn't return, so they put someone else in it, and then they went to all this trouble to make it.
Yeah.
You never see his face clearly because he's doing all this stupid stuff, like hanging off of the ceiling upside down and stuff, so that you don't get a good look at him and you can't tell that it's not the same guy anymore. So that's what I was talking about.
Okay. I don't know. Do we want to do closing remarks? I'm sure we got stuff. Like, I guess we can talk about what we got for Christmas.
Right. I have a new computer, so anyone who's tired of my old computer constantly muting the mic when I didn't tell it to can rest assured that probably won't happen. You know,
for or a while. Like you're talking and then like the mic cuts out and you have to adjust the levels like every 5 minutes, like the old one.
Right. And I've been using my phone to try to avoid doing that since we started doing it mainly through Slack instead of through Skype.
Yeah.
Although this one was done through Skype because Slack, we don't have the package where you can do multiple people on one call.
Well, we had it free for like 30 days, but that was like 4 or 5 months ago. And I mean, it was great for us when we did like Suicide Squad, but that was like the only time it really came to use.
Right.
Was it just the computer or what else did you get?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, the Mario and Pokemon games and.
Okay.
I got some DVDs, like the Kubo and the Two Strings, which I haven't seen yet.
Oh, let me know when you watch that, because I have been meaning to watch that as well.
I heard it was a good movie.
I've heard extremely good things.
They aired a like 2.5-minute trailer for it during One Piece on Toonami one time, kind of out of the blue, but I guess they do that kind of thing. And it looked really good in that, and so. But I didn't get a chance to see it when I was in theaters. But I do look forward to seeing that.
Daft, what did you get for Christmas?
Well, I mean, you guys got computers and cash and things like that. But personally, I donated. The guest gift I got was the gift to spend time with my family. I donated all of my gifts to relief efforts such as Habitat for Humanity. So it's shame on all of you for being capitalist pigs and supporting the machine. And you should choose to be good Samaritans like me.
We're participating in the capitalist revolution, Dan. The capitalists have taken the White House.
Which
wasn't a ghost.
Indeed.
Vika, what did you get or receive? Or give or receive?
I got or received $100 and a Beastie Boys CD and a sweater and a gift card to Regal Cinemas, which is the that's a chain of movies around here.
Yeah, we got a Regal and, near my
university. Like, does your Vaku, does your Regal have a recliner seat yet?
One of them does.
Yeah, but have you tried those yet? They're actually really sweet.
Yeah, they're cool. It's weird. It's hard to get used to, and since I'm so tall, you know, like half my legs are hanging off. But it is cool. I mean, yeah, I like it. It's cool.
That was where I tried to see, well, not Regal specifically, but at a reclining theater, the movie today, but it was sold out. And it was sold out for all four of the showtimes they had for today there.
That's crazy.
So it was kind of crazy that, you know, it's selling out for every showing weeks in. But I guess that's kind of a small theater where they only have like a handful of screens. So,
Vico, and I was going to say, Vico, do I have to ask, what Beastie Boys CD did you get?
The first one, Licensed to Ill.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a good one.
For me, I also got $100. I got some clothes, some nice, like a nice shirt and a nice, like, sweatshirt thing. I got beef jerky.
Nice.
And I think I got another gift card or something. And that's pretty much it. I don't think I'm missing anything else.
I actually got a record player for Christmas. That was my big get. And not a shitty Crosley. Like I got a big boy turntable. I got the Audio Technica LP120.
Oh, nice.
So I finally have something to play all my fucking records I've been collecting the past couple of years.
You didn't have any thing to play on before, or this is
my
just
parents
a better?
Well, my parents have a turntable, but I don't really like using it because it's kind of like high up, so I can't, or so like it's above my head and like I'm like 6 feet, so, and it's also like covered, like it's inside like a TV cabinet, like it's on the side of it, to the side, like with all the, like there's a side for the audio equipment, so it's kind of difficult to like place the records on there and actually see it because there's also no light in there. So now instead I just have the turntable on my desk next to me and I can just flip records, which is very nice. And I have speakers that double as speakers for my computer, which is good because my previous setup was only outputting from one side. So it's a nice change of pace.
Nice.
I need to play, I got the soundtrack to Over the Garden Wall, which is a Cartoon Network show that aired in 2013, I think. But Mondo actually put out an entire soundtrack release for that and has a bunch of different goodies with it. So I need to actually crack that open and give it a listen.
All right. Daft, you said something about you wanted to talk about a con you went to?
Yeah, actually.
Is that one where you met the artist of Yowie?
No, actually. Oh, man. Actually, I didn't even see the artist. I didn't see the artist of Yowie. Who was the... I didn't see that Republican anime podcast that I saw at another anime convention. I actually didn't see any other AOYs, which is very strange. But so I went to this wonderful convention called Northeast Comic Con, which, as described, occurs in the northeast of the country. I'm just quickly linking you guys to the site. So
sounds terrible already.
I've been to this convention before. So it's held in a gymnasium. It very much in a Chasing Amy vein. My favorite thing is whenever I see advertisements for this convention, whether it be a flyer, someone actually at a table shilling the podcast, like at different conventions, or I'm on a website or something, they always make a point to mention it is free parking. It just cracks me up that is like when your main highlight is that you offer free parking, you know you have a great convention. But honestly, that being said, like, even though it's in a gymnasium, it is a decent size. They've gotten some decent guests over the years. Like, they got Adam West 1 year. They had a few people from who affiliated with Who Framed Roger Rabbit 1 year, which I actually didn't go, which I'm kicking myself for that. But so the main reason I went to this con previously, and the reason my friend and I went again, was because Billy West was there. For those who don't know, Billy West is the voice of Doug on Doug, Ren and Stimpy, and like half the characters on Futurama.
Yeah.
So last time, so my friend, so I went to, I got him to sign my childhood Looney Tunes visual guide, which I'd actually gotten signed by the writer Jerry Beck, who's a noted animation historian.
Yeah.
So I had him sign that, and then to top my childhood copy of Space Jam that I had Billy West sign, because he voices Bugs in that movie, I had him sign a Laserdisc copy that my friend got me when he was working at a bookstore.
That's really
so
cool.
I had Billy West sign that. My friend, however, went primarily so she could get her copy of Comic Book the Movie signed. Which, have any of you had the privilege to view this classic film?
No, but
I have not.
Great.
So it's a mid-2000s movie. I believe Mark Hamill created it. He's the main actor in it. I think he directed it too. But so it's just him and all of his buddies just making a movie. Like most of the actors in it are primarily voice actors. Like Billy West plays a main character. Jess Harnell is in a bunch of the movie. Darren Norris, who plays Cosmo in Fairly Odd Parents, has a pretty notable role. So it's primarily voice actors who actually are the actors in this film. And there's a bunch of like really random cameos, like Matt Groening's in it. Stan Lee shows up, Paul Dini, Bruce Campbell, Lloyd Kaufman. Because, of course, Lloyd Kaufman shows up. But so my friend forced me to watch this after I told her my only interaction with it was seeing it in the $5 DVD bin in Walmart when I was in middle school. And she was extremely upset that I had not seen it before. And then proceeded to get her copy of the DVD out and demand I watch it. Which I will note was already autographed by Tom Kenny, Jess Harnell, and I believe someone else in addition to Billy West. Like, she just like is obsessed with this movie, and it's not very good. Like, I appreciated it because I recognized all, because as someone who's really into American voice actors, I appreciated all the cameos. The movie itself, not great, but it is interesting to see like a good chunk of the films actually was filmed at San Diego Comic-Con in the early 2000s. So it's kind of interesting to see like what was popular at that time period and see. Like,
that'd be interesting.
You might be Vegas. Very well might be. You should watch it.
Yeah.
You guys, listeners.
I was going to the con back then too.
Yeah. I appreciate it for the cameos and for some stuff. It's kind of, it's meta in a way. It's not good, but you may as, if you like American voice actors and stuff, it's worth a shot. It's something I'm not surprised that Mark Hamill did, since he's a huge fucking nerd. But yeah,
did
so
you
Billy
like it
West,
more than a superhero movie, which you got hit by your ISP for downloading?
Oh, easily. The production value is largely the same, which is impressive considering this is a very small film and came out several years earlier. But I assume this probably aged as well as superhero movie probably has. Which is to say, not very well. But so Billy West plays plays a major role in the film. So, and my friend previously got it signed by Billy West, but she had him, he autographed like the outside of it instead of like the actual insert. So it had like over time it had just rubbed off. So she's like, shit, I need to go see Billy West again to get it re-signed. And I was like, oh, hey, he's here in 3 weeks. So we went mostly just to go see him, and he did a panel that was pretty interesting. He mostly talked about like his life growing up and how his dad was a drunk and how like he he kind of came into his voices because he would just get lost in his own head, just to like, because that was who his friends were. Because I guess he didn't really have a lot of friends his age and not a lot of like geeky friends. And he also talked about how he recently got diagnosed for ADD. And I think he said he had dyslexia. I can't remember. I know he definitely got diagnosed with ADD a few years ago. But like, so he's just like, yeah, like I had all these learning difficulties that no one knew how to properly diagnose them or understand them when I was a child. So they just all thought I was stupid.
Other than just the same guy that was also like feuding with some other voice actor that had stolen a role on Scooby Doo.
That's actually that is also another really funny bit. I forgot I posted that in the chat. So I forgot how we got on the subject with him. We were just talking about like how I bet we were talking about like how the voice acting community, there's a lot of camaraderie within it. Like everyone's super supportive of one another and things like that. Like I listened to Rob Paulson's podcast. Shout out to Rob Paulson's Talking Tunes podcast. Really solid podcast. Much better than this one, whatever this is even called now. But so we were just talking about how voice actors support one another. And Billy West was just like, yeah, no, we're all really good friends. If you try and fuck us over, we fuck you back. So he brought up, so he started talking about this one guy who I believe his name is pronounced Scott Innes. And so this guy was he was around in the late 90s, early 2000s, and he is mostly known for he voiced Scooby-Doo actually voiced Scooby-Doo in between who originally voiced Scooby-Doo?
Isn't it Casey Kasem?
No, he voiced
was he only Shaggy.
Yeah, actually, so luckily enough, Billy West actually played Shaggy in Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island, and apparently the reasoning behind that was because there were multiple scenes where Shaggy was eating like these giant meat sandwiches, and Casey Kasem was just like, "Why does he always have to eat meat?" Because Casey Kasem was a vegetarian and basically just refused to do the movie because he was offended that Shaggy had to keep eating meat.
Wow.
Yeah, that was the thing that happened. But yeah, so in between the original voice actor of Scooby-Doo, Don Messick voiced Scooby-Doo. So in between Don Messick dying in 1997 and Frank Welker taking over the role in 2002, this guy voiced Scooby-Doo, including in the live-action movies. And so apparently what he would do is he would just like shit talk other voice actors in front of the other voice actors. Like Billy West was telling us one time about I guess like Frank Welker was like trying to do like a teenage voice and the voice director didn't think it was coming out 110%. So Scott Innes was like, well, if old man can't do it, I'll gladly do the role. And stuff like that.
Yeah, this was the guy that was always undercutting the other voice actors.
Yeah, exactly. He was doing something like that. Like, he'd ask, I guess he would go up to voice actors and ask them, like, to do the voice. And so, like, they'd start doing, like, their iconic voice to him. He'd be like, no, I mean, how do you do the voice? So, and, like, people, I guess, word spread around the voice acting community what this guy was doing, and he was a huge shithead. So, apparently, he went up to Jim Cummings and asked him how he did the voice of Winnie the Pooh, which he's been doing for decades now. And so apparently I don't have the exact I don't remember the exact quote off the top of my head, but essentially what it was, I believe, was Jim Cummings told him to drink half a gallon of whiskey and scream into his pillow for as long as he could the night before he had to do like an audition. Which is pretty awesome, because like Jim Cummings just generally comes off as just like a very nice, like, quiet, like, good Samaritan. Like, he voices Winnie the Pooh. How can he be a dick? But when prompted, he was he had no problem being a dick. We went on Sunday because Billy West panel was specifically on Sunday, and there was maybe 35 people at the panel. So my friend and I got a bunch of good FaceTime with him. My friend is pretty cute, so Billy kept like chatting, making an effort to chat with us because of that. So I'm trying to think of what else happened at the con.
Oh, I was so, gonna, yeah, so, I was going to ask you, like, I remember you wanted to go to, you talked about seeing Jerry Beck, like, at, what was it, the Norman Rockwell Museum or something in October? God,
yeah.
Yeah, I like let to hear about that, because, like...
Let me check, I'll get to that, okay. Let me finish talking about this con, because, yeah, that's actually something I should totally bring up, too. I totally spaced on that.
Yeah, I would like to hear details on that.
Yeah, so what else happened at Northeast Comic Con? So we went on a Sunday, so... I talked to actually my older cousin went on Saturday and said it was pretty packed, but we went on Sunday and it was dead. And I have to say, I have never been like harangued by people. Like I go to 3 or 4 cons a year. I've never been harangued by more people at booths than I was at this convention. Bad about it, but it's just like, they're just so starved for attention that, like, whenever anyone, like, walked by their table or gave them, like, a slight hint of eye contact, they just, like, jumped on you. Because they were just so desperate for interaction and talk about, like, whatever their fan work that they made is, or, like, their original creation, or just sell their shit. And my friend and I were just not interested in, like, 90% of it. Like, yeah. Some dude, like, came up, like, asked us like, hey, do you like comics? And I was just like, I just flat out said, no, I do not like comics.
That sounds really uncomfortable.
I mean, he also like kind of used a better line, but like, yeah, I went to Northeast Comic Con, I don't like comics, you know? But like, I don't want to hear about your shitty fan work, dude. Like, we got suckered into a couple people. Like, I actually have to throw out their like cards or like mini book that they gave me. Which I feel bad about, but like when they like stop you and like they chat with you, you have like no choice but to interact, and then they start handing you stuff, and like you don't want to be a dick and say no.
Unless you become a dick and just say no.
Yeah, I mean, like debatably, it's better to do that because now I'm just gonna throw away this like person's business card or whatever, and they have to pay for that. So I guess that's, but like I guess it's being a dick to their face versus just being a dick in general. But I don't know. There's also a couple vendors that were selling weed paraphernalia, which was also a first for me at a convention. I was not expecting that.
Is marijuana legal in New Hampshire?
No. Oh, it is not at all. And it was it's legal in Massachusetts and Maine as of the 15th, I think. Or at least in Massachusetts it's legal as the 15th. But this con happened before then. But yeah, but I mean, there was like a bunch of kids there and they were just like, selling pieces.
Mm-hmm. Like, isn't Vermont also moving to legalize it?
I don't think Vermont actually has it. Vermont isn't legalized. At least I think it's probably decriminalized, but it's definitely not legalized.
Okay, I thought there was like a bill in the Vermont House or something. I don't know.
They might be trying now. I know it's not passed like Massachusetts is. But yeah, it's just a matter of time, though. It's legal, but they don't have the legislation or anything set up for the stores. So the stores aren't going to open until 2018, which mm-hmm. is hilarious.
Yeah, it's a very slow process. For a long time, there was just one medical marijuana dispensary here that had a monopoly. And then eventually they finally let others open. But, you know, it takes a long time for these laws to go into effect.
Yeah. Yeah, slowly catch up. So yeah, there are a bunch of like random people here that my friend and I didn't interact with. They had a couple. They had a couple people in Devo. They had a couple people from the Ramones. Like I just walked by their booths because they were right by the entrance, and I felt really bad for them because no one gave a shit. I don't think I saw a single person outside their booth, and they just looked really bored.
Why are they wasting their time there?
I mean, they get paid to be there, plus they make money per, like, how I imagine how a lot of guests at conventions are booked is they get paid, like, an upfront fee, and then they get paid based off, like, the number of autographs they sell. So, like, you have to pay for the autographs. Like, I paid Billy West probably 20 to 30 bucks for autographing my shit.
Oh, God. That's terrible. I would never do that. I would never do that ever.
No, I mean, but the thing is, like, that's how you get Billy West or these bigger guests to come to your convention, though. Because otherwise, you're going to be paying $6,000. Like, it's essentially you pay $1,000 and you put the cost on to the people who want autographs, or you pay a flat fee and they do free autographs, but you're going to be paying like four times that much, you know?
Yeah, because it's based on their contract with their whoever they're under or whatever.
Yeah, I forget the exact terms. I learned about this when I was trying to book. My anime club has been trying to do a convention on and off, so I looked into booking guests for them. So I think it's flat fee. There's flat fee, and I forget what the autograph affiliated one is. But yeah, no, it really sucks because I'm used. At UNH, like, we'd book people, they just do autographs for free. It's like, $30 is a lot for an autograph, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think any amount of money is too much because, they're probably not hurting for money. And,
Billy West gets plenty of residuals. Yeah, the fortunate thing is on Sunday, since we went Sunday, there's basically no line, which makes it really nice. But yeah, no, like, you have to, like, I've heard of, like, people pay for charge for selfies and stuff like that.
I know, like, when my brother went and saw, like, the voice of Gurr or whatever from Invader Zim, like, at some really crappy con a few years ago, like, he was charging for autographs, but, in terms of photos, it was free.
At least I paid for a print. I got an 8x10 at least when I met Richard Horton.
Yeah, but like the Gurr or whatever was like, my brother was like, well, can I get a photo with you? He's like, yeah, sure, that's fine. It's just a matter of like him charging for autographs there. And it was such a small con that like, you know, he's got to make money somehow or to pay for him being there. However that worked out on booking.
I think it depends on like how well run the convention is. Like usually the like guest has like a handler to help them with the stuff, and like if they're gonna be dicks about it, or they might be strict about it, like especially if they're like one of the people running the convention. And also I think it depends on like the guest. Like Billy West gave my friend and I like free pictures because my friend was attractive, so he just wanted to be nice and like so he wanted to be nice to us. And so it's strong. A recommendation to our listener: if you're going to go to a convention, go with a hot girl. It helps.
Are you going to talk about Jerry Beck or whatever?
Oh yeah, so that's another thing I did actually a few weeks or before that. So my friend and I went on a 3-day trip to Montreal to see Porter Robinson and Madeon, which coincidentally, in 4 days, their collaboration song "Shelter" will be airing its. Their music video for the song will be airing on Toonami on the 31st because the music video was done by A1 Pictures, and there's a couple mid-sized names attached to the project. Porter Robinson's brother used to work at Crunchyroll, and he's at Polygon now, I believe.
Ah.
But so on the way to Montreal, we stopped at the Norman Rockwell Museum, which is in Western Massachusetts, which is kind of like bumfuck nowhere tier, like basically right next to New York. And so we went to this to the museum in part because it was the opening day of a Hanna-Barbera exhibit that they opened up there. I should actually post. I'll upload my pictures for that. I actually need to upload those pictures.
Yeah,
for my
I like to, I like to see this
and listen to those. So yeah, like they had a 4 or 5 massive rooms that were just decked out with like concept art, like cells, scripts, press kits. Like what's the word I want? So for Scooby Doo, they had a title card. They had all the pitch material when they were trying to sell the show to CBS when it was originally called Who's Scared? And
I didn't even know that was the original title. Wow.
I didn't either, honestly, and I was amazed by it. I actually learned quite a lot from the exhibit. They had this, they had like a TV that kind of looked like, they kind of like themed like the like corner to like make it look like the Jetsons TV, and they kind of like did like some retro future succeeding, and are like a bunch of little kids watching like clips of the Hanna-Barbera shows. And so they covered pretty much everything. Like they had some stuff that Hanna and Barbera did before they met. They had one wall that was dedicated just to Tom and Jerry. They kind of like, it was kind of divided into Tom and Jerry, like Huckleberry Hound, Yogi Bear, the Flintstones, like mid 60s, like Johnny Quest types of, yeah, Jetsons and Flintstones were essentially one room.
I would imagine those two would be in the same room because they were like the animated, like primetime slot in the 60s.
Yeah. And then, they had like a room, they had like a decent section for like all the action cartoons, like Johnny Quest and stuff like that.
Did they have a section for like the low tier Hanna-Barbera stuff, like, Speed Buggy and Captain Caveman or whatever?
I'm deeply disturbed at how well you did that, Captain.
No, it was not well.
It was really good.
Yeah, I am extremely impressed by that.
Thank
like,
you.
Like, honestly, after Scooby-Doo, the exhibit kind of tapered off. They didn't cover, they had like a bunch of random stuff. They actually had some Cartoon Network stuff there. Like they had something, I think they had something for What a Cartoon. Like some print. That was signed by Craig McCracken of Powerpuff Girls,
oh, wow.
Van Partible of Johnny Bravo, and Jenny Tartakovsky of Dexter's Lab. And that was, and that's that, among some other later Hanna-Barbera artifacts, was actually donated to the exhibit by Fred Seibert, who he created What a Cartoon. He was a part of Oh Yeah Cartoons. He was a part of MTV when that first launched. And like helped devise the
liquid
the
television and
astronaut
like...
of he helped come with the ad campaign of like the astronaut putting the MTV logo on the moon.
Oh, nice.
He's the Fred and Frederator. So during Jerry Beck's talk, to skip ahead a little bit, I saw him out of a corner of my eye. I was like, I think I know who, like Jerry Beck hinted that this guy was, that Fred Seibert was there. And I was like, okay, I need to, this guy in my peripheral vision was just sticking out of a corner of my eye, like that dude looks familiar. And I Googled his, and somehow I just assumed it was Fred Seibert. And I Googled and I was like, holy fuck, it's actually him. And I was like, dude, should I go up to this guy and just say, hey, you look like Fred Seibert? And then just as I was thinking that, Jerry Beck, what during his talk was like, I have to mention that he's here, just like give a hand for Fred Seibert and everything he's done stuff. And I just like, I ended up after Jerry Beck's talk, I cornered him as he was leaving the bathroom and, just like fangirled really hard and had him sign my Hanna-Barbera book that I bought.
And I hope he washed his hands.
Oh, no, I got him after. Oh, yeah, hopefully. I didn't go in the bathroom. I waited, like, outside of the bathroom. My friend was, like, across the hall and was taking stealth photos. Shout out to Emily. And so that was pretty great. And I was just like, I'm, like, a huge, you're, like, my biggest idol. Because, like, Fred Seibert is, like, one of my idols. Like, he basically has, like, everything he touched over the, like, for the past 30 years has turned into gold. Like, he helped build Nickelodeon, he helped build Cartoon Network, he helped build MTV.
Wow.
Channel Frederator is becoming pretty huge, and they're actually doing they're entering kind of a streaming subscription model with Crunchyroll. I forget what that's exactly called. I know it's Nerdist affiliated as well.
I was going to ask, like, were you able to talk or meet up with Jerry Beck in any way, or...
So Jerry Beck, so part of the reason why we went opening day was Jerry Beck actually was doing a lecture there, because he helped participate in the exhibit. He contributed to a book that they were selling at the exhibit. About the exhibit. And so he spoke for about an hour. He kind of just, I talked to him very briefly because I had him sign my Looney Tunes visual guide that I got when I was in fifth grade. And I just told him I read this stuff for a while and appreciated it. But I kind of caught him like, right as like he was about to start, so I wasn't really able to chat with him too much.
No, that
and
makes
so
sense.
he kind of just had a slideshow, and he openly admitted he didn't even know what pictures he put on the slideshow or like what he was. He didn't really have much prepared. So he kind of was just flipping through his slides and was just like, yeah, I was a part of like the Huckleberry Hounds. Like he had like, there's like a Huckleberry Hound fan club that you could mail in. So he had a picture of like a letter you got if you joined the Huckleberry Hound fan club. And he was like, I had one of those. I hope I can't find it, but I have one. I got one exactly like that. And so they kind of like, he went through like different like pictures of the different Hanna-Barbera characters and things like that. And just kind of gave like a very light brush overview of Hanna-Barbera. And he took some questions from the crowd. He was kind of very candid and open. Like someone brought up how Seth MacFarlane was there a few years ago. There was an attempt by Seth MacFarlane to revive the Flintstones. Which honestly, Seth MacFarlane would have been a pretty decent choice considering he came through in animation with Hanna-Barbera. Like he worked on Johnny Bravo. He did a couple pilots that are on What a Cartoon.
Well, he also did like a very early pilot to what became Family Guy also.
Yes. I forget what that's called.
I've seen most of it. Yeah. And it's actually kind of funny.
Yeah. And he almost died in 9/11. But so yeah. He kind of brought up how like there's a bunch
of
like
Larry and Steve.
Yes, that one. That is what it is. And so there's like he kind of talked about how like there's probably just some internal politics regarding that show not getting made and stuff like that. Like he shat on a lot of like different studios and people and stuff. It's kind of funny. I guess it makes sense if he's a reporter. He's like the premier internet like or like animation historian. So I guess he's opinionated on. Who's legit and shit.
I mean, he's gonna be like, if Josh continues to do what he does, like that's gonna be Josh in like 40 years from now. So like, that'd be pretty cool. Like, did he mention anything about Streamline Pictures? That would be like my question to ask him.
Yeah, I actually wanted to try and ask him a little bit about that guy because he started Streamline, or he was like a major
with
figure.
Fred Patton and Carl Masek.
Yeah, I don't really recall him. I'll flip through my phone because I took some notes during the lecture. I don't think he really touched upon anime all that much, unfortunately. They actually were selling a book. In the Norman Rockwell store, they were selling some Hanna-Barbera related books. And so I guess Hanna and Barbera both have biographies, but both of those are long out of print. Mm-hmm. I actually finished My Life in Tunes, which is Bill Hanna's book. Fucking terrible. I cannot recommend it. it was 250 pages that I will generally not get back because it was really just a light brush overview that didn't really touch upon much. Other than he did put a page or two about him justifying Hanna-Barbera's cost-saving tactics and he also kind of talked about when the Hanna-Barbera animators went on strike because Hanna-Barbera hired a bunch of overseas artists. So it's kind of interesting to see he kind of talked about that a bit in the book. But otherwise, not that great. So I'm skimming through my notes right now.
So I wanted to say something. Because you said that these guys were your idols or whatever.
Well, Fred Seibert, yeah.
Do you get starstruck then when you see, like, people that, you know, not celebrities exactly, but just, like, people whose work you're familiar with or whatever at a convention?
I'm generally not too bad about that. Fred Seibert, I did, however, I was kind of, like, stammering through it. Because, like, there's very few people, like, on like the business side of animation that like have made an impact to the level that Fred Seibert has to the industry. I think like it's pretty much like if you look at like a lot of the popular shows airing on Cartoon Network and Nickelodeon and things like that, like trends in the animation industry and things like that, Fred Seibert is responsible for a lot of that. Like if you look at his wiki and see like the things that he's credited with doing and stuff like that, you'd be impressed with how like he's been like stalking you since childhood, essentially.
I see.
So I kind of like melted when I saw him. Like normally I would not be the type to stalk a dude outside of a bathroom to chat with him, but in that case I did have to make a lone exception.
Generally
I'm pretty like hanging with Wiseau, I generally did not give a fuck, especially because that guy's a fucking prick anyway.
Yeah, he really is. I just finished reading
The Disaster Artist a few weeks
ago, and I was amazed at how much of a fucking piece of shit Tommy Wiseau is. Like, I was floored. Like, I had no idea. I just thought this was just like some funny, you know, foreign guy. But he's an a-hole. He's a complete a-hole. Like,
he got all his money by bootlegging, essentially.
Yeah,
because he imported clothing.
That part of it was really interesting. That was really weird. But just like the stuff he put people through, you know, and not even on the movie set, but just the stuff he put, Greg through, his supposed best friend, you know, it was really surprising.
I think it's so weird that, like, because, like, The Disaster Artist is, like, been out for a couple of years, but, like, he's still, like, Greg and Tommy still hang out.
Yeah,
like
still
Tommy still promotes the book. He says he loves Greg. Like when I booked Tommy for UNH, like he asked if he could bring Greg along, and he was like, "No, he's just like, hey, is it cool if I bring Greg along?" And we were like, "Sure," but we don't have any more money. And he's like, "Oh, it's fine. I'll just buy his hotel room."
And he's like a billionaire too. Is the other thing like, that's crazy. I can't believe that.
Did Adult Swim pay homage to Era's movies or what? Like,
he made his fortune even before this movie came out. Then he paid for all the stuff on the movie himself.
Yeah, The Room was budgeted at $5 million. And he had $5 million.
And he paid for like all this like stuff. He paid to shoot it in HD and 35mm at the same time or whatever, even though he bought all the equipment. he bought all of it.
So. Well, what was this thing about him being a bootlegger? That's how he became rich?
He made his money by importing textiles.
Why is that illegal?
It's not necessarily illegal as much as he's like undercutting or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it was, it's counterfeit merchandise is what.
No.
That's what I got out of it. Although he was very secretive about it. In the book, and you know, even I don't think Greg fully understood exactly what that was all about, because he was never really straight with him, because he was like embarrassed about the whole thing or something, so he never really says exactly how he got rich. But
is he consistent about like supporting good counterfeit stuff, or does he go after people who counterfeit The Room? I would think.
I don't know about that. I think he's probably thinks any publicity is good publicity, so.
Maybe so, yeah. People see it online and then they go to see it in a theater.
Yeah, it's all part of the culture. Yeah. But, I really highly recommend that book. It's very interesting.
I know Greg wrote that with someone else, and I am inclined to believe that based on my interactions with Greg and the quality of the book, I'm assuming that the other person wrote a significant amount of that book and Greg just like chatted it to him or dictated it, I suppose.
Yeah, maybe. And the other thing I was surprised is that they are still really good friends, even after Greg wrote all this stuff in the book, you know, basically telling everyone what an a-hole Tommy is, that they are still like best friends, which is, I mean, that's really weird. I mean,
Tommy put Greg through the ringer, but at the same time, like, Tommy put Greg up for free. And Greg, like, shit all over Tommy publicly. Like, he could have opted not to do that, but he still did. So, like, they're both kind of shit to each other, but they're apparently okay with that.
They're two of a kind.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It is. Yeah, it is kind of not cool to write, like, this tell-all about where you tell everyone that this guy's actually a huge prick, you know, here's all the reasons why, here's all the bad stuff he's ever done to me and like all these other people. But I definitely recommend that book.
I'll note that down for show notes. I don't know, like my only thing, like when you mentioned Jerry Beck, is I would like to ask him more questions about Streamline, because I mean with Masek being dead for like 6 years or coming up on seven. And Fred Patton, I don't know how long he's got. Yeah, and Fred Patton's like in his 80s, like right now. Like, I don't know how long he's going to last. Like, Jerry Beck's kind of like the last person from Streamline to like have all this information. I mean, like, Fred Patton still writes for Jerry's Cartoon Historian site. Like, he did that whole thing like last year about like whatever information he had about Streamline in terms of like all these products that they had licensed and how much, like, what went into it or what didn't get made, or, you know, what was some of the stuff they were looking at, like inside baseball stuff that like hasn't really been discussed, you know, probably ever, that he still like happens to recall.
Yeah, actually, going through my my notes I took of the talk, he did mention anime once. In that, I think someone asked like kind of a open ended question of like, is 2D animation going to get outpaced by CGI? And his response was like, look at like, he's flat out said no, because in part of like Being Puppy Cat, which is a Channel Frederator thing, animation classes and anime, because like anime is definitely becoming a lot more popular in countries outside of Japan, and primarily that is 2D, although with classics such as Berserk opting to skip the 2D format, maybe we will see more free CGI only animated things, but I highly doubt that.
Yeah.
And he even noted that like stop motion is kind of making a comeback as well.
Well, Daph, yeah. Since you talked about your comic convention, do you want to hear about the one I went to a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, let me I'm trying to think if there's any other... Oh, okay. Actually, there's one other piece I want to bring up from the Hanna-Barbera exhibit. So I mentioned how they had all those the concept art and animation cells on the walls. But in the middle of the exhibit, they had a number of toys that were licensed or not licensed by Hanna-Barbera through the years, a majority of them being from the 50s and 60s. And so I happened to... So those were all curated by this guy. And, so I ended up, so I was just admiring like one of the displays with these like insane looking, like this just impressive amount of sick of older Hanna-Barbera stuff. Like some of the toys were straight out. Do you guys remember those Boomerang ads or those ads that they had for Boomerang with the toys like running through?
Yeah, I think is it kind of like stop motion sort of for
the old bumpers with the models?
Yeah,
yeah, I think I remember bumpers. Those.
Like, they used
that's
like,
the classic Boomerang look.
Yeah, and they used actual Hanna-Barbera toys for that from back in the day, and like some of those toys were on display.
Well,
and so nice. This guy's. So I was just looking at them, and this guy's just like, "Oh, what do you think of the toys?" I'm like, "Oh, I think it's really cool. Like, I wonder how hard it is to collect all this stuff." And he's like, "Oh, trust me, I know. I'm the guy who donated it all for the exhibit." And so I saw. So he's just the collector. I ended up chatting with the collector for like upwards of a half hour. I also got to see him use that like line several times, where he's just like casually like, "Oh, you think this is cool? Well, I'm the guy who donated it all and spent all this time collecting it." Which is kind of funny, but he was a really nice guy. I actually found out in just chatting with him that he's actually the grandson of June Foray, who voices Granny in Looney Tunes and Rocky and Rocky and Bullwinkle, among numerous roles over the years. And so he like showed me like some pictures that like family photos of, because he's her primary caretaker. So he's just showing me pictures of him and her from like the past few years, just like her with his toy collection and stuff like that.
I didn't realize she was still alive. Wow.
She is 99. I'll help break some news on the Cool Kids Club podcast. She is retired from voice acting because she is like she I think she did a role last year, or she did for that Peabody and Sherman show, or the Peabody and Sherman movie, they did a Rocky and Bullwinkle short, and she still voiced Rocky, like even at like 98, 99.
Man,
but I guess she, I think he said she suffered a fall a couple years ago or something, or it's just like she's officially retired now, unfortunately. She was on Rob Paulson's podcast a year or two ago, and she was still she was sharp as a tack, honestly, which I was pretty impressed with for someone of her age.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and so he's just talking about, I guess he talked about being Joe Barbera's assistant, which he was for a number of years. He worked in the animation industry for a while, and, a lot of the, I noticed, stuff on the walls were signed, David, but, I realized, this was the dude's stuff that he just put on the walls. So I guess he's just, obviously he had family in the business, but he also was a fan himself, and his mom kept a lot of his collection, and he also collected over time, too, and he kind of talked about, he told me about, the eBay wars he gets in with the different collectors. He mentioned how he was interested in buying a Flintstones camp. So they have, they have Jellystone, fairgrounds. It's basically just, they have cabins or tents, and it's just, they just license the jelly, the Yogi Bear theming to it. So I think they have, something similar to that, but for the Flintstones, in areas like Arizona and stuff. Actually, I have a pretty good video for the show notes relating to that, where some dude just found and abandoned one of these.
Holy Wait, what crap. Happened in Arizona?
They have this, Flintstones amusement park.
Here?
I think they have 20 of them. Some of them are still active.
What?
You have to go to this, John.
I think the one in Arizona is in very derelict shape.
Is it in Phoenix area? I don't want to go to this now.
I don't know. I found an article that has some pretty good pictures. I'll try and find... I can't find the video immediately, but I'll make sure Zionic has it for the show notes. But the guy's commentary on it is hilarious.
Was this opened in the 60s?
Some of them are still open now.
But this has been going for 50 years?
I don't know if it's been around that long. I just linked to the video.
It says it's in the middle of the Arizona on the way to the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, exactly. It's a tourist trap.
Right. This is the thing. I don't know if you know about that, but that's this tourist trap that's got billboards every few miles for states, or weird tour that has Hitler's car and a bunch of other random memorabilia.
That's a real place. They reference that in the classic 2001 iconic film classic Rat Race.
Why did you say it
that? You didn't know it was real?
I didn't realize that was real. Yeah, John Lovitz's characters, they go to the Barbie, his daughter wants to go to the Barbie Museum, and they go to the Barbie Museum, and it's dedicated to some Nazi dude whose last name was Barbie or something, and they end up stealing Hitler's car, and John Lovitz accidentally ends up driving it into a World War II memorial celebration or something, where they had World War II veterans. I remember too much of Rat Race.
I have never seen this film.
It was directed by one of the Zucker brothers. Those are the guys behind Airplane and The Naked Gun. It's not great. I mean, I appreciate it because I was subjected to it a lot in middle school, because it was one of the few movies that my friend was obsessed with and would make us watch. I've seen Dickie Roberts' Former Child Star about 20 times because of this.
I've seen that movie once. So
I kind of like David Spade, even though he's terrible and not funny. I still kind of like David Spade. Yeah. It's not as good as for non-airplane Naked Gun films. It's not as good as An American Carol, which is which came out in 2008. And the premise of that movie is it's an American Carol, or it's a Christmas Carol. With the main character, instead of Scrooge, it's not Michael Moore, played by not Chris Farley. And by not Chris Farley, I mean Chris Farley's brother plays not Michael Moore. And he's like, I hate America. Blah, blah, blah. And then he gets visited by Did I make you watch it? I watched it when it came out around that time, because that came out a year before a superhero movie, and I was obsessed with Zucker Abram Zucker, so I watched
it. Yeah, this is one of the worst things you made me watch, up there with Food Fight.
Oh, well, Food Fight's, like, endearing. An American Carol is just, like, kind of offensive, depending on your political leanings.
I don't think I can see it to the eyes.
It's offensive to just in general, because, like, you see poor Leslie Nielsen just sitting at a picnic table waiting to die. And I think I forget who else is in it, but there's a bunch of other people in it who it's like, oh, why are you here? You're better than this.
I don't think I'll ever have a reason to see Food Fight. I mean, I saw a Sausage Party like a few weeks ago, and I was like, well, that's an hour and a half I'll never get back.
My understanding, I still haven't seen Sausage Party, but my understanding is their premises are slightly similar, which is terrifying to me, that there is actually a movie that is like in a Venn diagram to Food Fight and actually was successful.
Well, FYI, at the end of the movie, as I was expecting, there's a giant food sex orgy to finish off the movie.
Yeah, they didn't have that in Food Fight. I think Hilary Duff was too young when she was doing the voice acting for it, so I don't think they were allowed to do it.
All right.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there is anything else. I think I covered. Listen, I think there was another tangent I wanted to.
Well,
go on, but I totally forget it. But you should tell us about your convention experience, Yannick. I don't know if it'll compare to hanging with Fred Seibert or buying pieces in a gymnasium.
Far from it. Far, far from it. So I heard about this through like the local news website, and it's basically there's a town near my town called 96 South Carolina. And the high school band.
It's called 96.
96. And there's like a geographic. It's named after that because it's referring to like, I guess, colonial times where it was like a point on the map, I guess, geographically, where like it was a trading post area. That's like the history behind the town, but it's a small town. But they have a high school out there. And the high school band decided to do a, quote, Comic Con to raise money for them to go to something in the spring, which I don't even know if they got the money for that yet or not. They probably didn't.
That's a terrible idea. Why would you do something for a fundraiser that would require a lot of money to effectively do?
Well, here is how it went down, which is it was disappointing, which met all my expectations. So basically,
this just ends. Yannick hates high schoolers and hates high school bands and doesn't want them to go on trips. Continue.
Well, I mean, if they set it up right, which maybe for them this is a first year experiment. So basically. I can't even think of the name. Whatever. I'm just going to call it 96 Con. Anyways, like, the directions was on this, like, local news site thing about where it was. Like, and they said it was across the street from this Mexican restaurant. Well, across the street from this Mexican restaurant, the town is an open field with nothing there. So you're like, okay. So then me and Dory were riding together, and we came across a parked minivan that they decided to tape, like, really brightly colored paper on it. And they wrote, like, the words convention here and, like, an arrow pointing the opposite way of where the actual convention was. So, like, I'm driving around in a neighborhood thinking, like, it's down the neighborhood or near a church or something. And it wasn't. So then we went back, and then there was another sign catty-corner to it, which was out of sight. No, what happened was I saw a car pull up from, like, this dirt, like, road. And then back there was, like, some warehouse buildings, and I'm like, something tells me it's back there, and I'm probably right. So I drive back there, and there's like 30 cars, and I've got pictures of this where basically they plastered like a paper sign on the front door of a warehouse that just says like Comic-Con inside or something like that. I've got photos of this, and I was like just smiling of just how terrible I knew this was going to be. So I walked in there. So they took people from the local university to like play music there. And there was like two Star Wars cosplayers and there was two zombie actors from Walking Dead, which doesn't surprise me because they're probably Georgian actors and,
made in Georgia.
Yeah.
Can I tell one brief, I have one brief tangent that I realized I forgot to tell during my convention thing.
Well, let me finish up real quick. This is not going to be too long. Okay. I didn't even go to any of the guests, and there's like two dealers in there, and one of the dealers I went to, I gave him like $15 for like a stack of comics, which mostly consisted of like old Comico, Robotech comics, Area 88, and some Cable comics, some other random stuff I got. Just looking through the stuff, because this is somebody that bought things secondhand from other people, and I noticed that some of the stuff that he had that I bought came from somebody else that used to sell comics close by to where I was, out of a storage shed, which is where I used to get like my anime stuff from, and he was a cool guy.
You used to buy your anime things from a shed? I just imagine you just knock on his door, just like wrinkly ass shack, and the guy opens the door is like, "Hey, well, kid, you want some anime?"
Well, Daft, you're about a quarter of a way right there.
I left out the part where he anally rapes you, right?
Okay, so this guy sold comics out of a warehouse area, or like one of those storage areas, but like it's a number of people that sell stuff out of there like on the weekends as like another like trading post or whatever, and this guy like solely selected on like video games and comic books and whatever else he had back there. And I didn't find out until a year later that he died, because I went to go over there to get some stuff, and this like lady that I never seen before like opened it up, and she's like, "Yeah, he passed away a year ago," and I was really sad. And then I noticed that like the guy at this comic convention had some of the stuff this guy used to have because of how the stickers were used to look like and how he labeled things. And I was like, so I'm still gathering more for like hardly nothing of what I used to like pay him for his stuff. But like, yeah, so I got a whole stack of this stuff just like sitting in my closet that I got for like $15 or so. Like, I think of like maybe 30 or 40 comics. And some of those are like still wrapped. Like there's like Viz issues. Like when Viz used to put out like the manga and comic form that are like still shrink wrapped or something. So they're basically have never been opened up in 20-something years, which is amazing to me. So, and this guy was also talking to me like, "Oh, you know, why don't the like town we live in like do like a comic convention?" I'm like, that's probably not a good idea, because I know the nerds around here and I don't want to associate myself with them. What was interesting enough was the fact that there's like a, oh gosh, there's like a local business. I mean, not locally, but they kind of like operate like within South Carolina. They're called Bath Fitters. They basically like they're a company set up to like set old people up with like proper sit down like I guess like tubs or whatever, so old people can bathe themselves. And they had a booth at a comic convention, quote unquote, which was just bizarre to me. Because what person's going to come in a comic convention? It's like, I want to drop $5,000 on an old person's toilet. And bathtub, because why the hell not?
I mean, Disneyland, like, some of the stores that they opened with on day one, like, they had, like, a women's lingerie shop. So, whatever vendors you can to, like, get people to show up to fill the space, I suppose.
So what, was it like, oh, you want to imagine what Bella looks like in Fredericks and Hollywood stuff? Come in this store and find out or whatever.
I mean, Bella wasn't around then, so I guess it was more so Minnie. Yeah, there's a bunch of weird startup. There are a bunch of weird startup like type ventures at Northeast Comic Con too, and like that didn't even have to do with comics. And like, I could tell they're just bored out of their minds and like realized, why did we do this? But I refused to give them eye contact unless they had free shit. I just took their free shit and left.
I mean, I just kind of saw the Walking Dead actors from a distance, and I didn't even bother. I just met with this one guy and looked through comics because like. I showed up the last 2 hours that they were open. And it was interesting because it was all run by high school kids, which basically, me and Dory could have walked in there and not paid them $2 for entry fee, and we could have walked right in because they weren't even guarding their booth like
exactly.
Half the time. Yeah, because it's run by freaking high school kids. And I'm pretty sure other people did that too. So, but I was like, oh, I'll be honest and help them out since I'm here. And they're like, oh, yeah, we got to get this money from you. Like, they just didn't care. I'm like, you guys are missing out on, like, your band freaking trip or whatever. Like, you obviously...
I mean, it's also, like, a fun thing for them to do, I'm sure. They're fucking band geeks. Like, they probably like the Comic-Con scene.
The thing is, like, I feel like you can slap Comic-Con on anything and get something of a crowd to show up.
Yeah, exactly. That's why like, I want. The fact that's why that more than get my anime club to start one, so I can get free shit.
The fact that more than 10 people were there like surprises me, and I'm pretty sure there might have been earlier that afternoon. But I mean, I wasn't worried about showing up later because I'm just like, I just got to see where it's at. But it's just the fact that they had it in a warehouse and like there wasn't like a decent sign or any attempt to like graphically make it look cool or anything, and they just like got one of those like multicolored like. Pieces of paper from an art store and just like got like a Black Ink pen and wrote like Comic Con here or something. It was so ghetto, but it's exactly what I expected. And it was pathetic, but like again, it was like the fact that I went in there and like helped somebody out, like selling like him selling comics. I was like, yeah, why not? Because he had stuff I wanted. No, that was pretty much it. That's all I had. All right, so what was your? Go ahead, VK.
That actually sounds pretty interesting because I think the smallest convention I've ever been to is probably Otakon, and that's still like one of the biggest conventions in the world. So
I kind of like the gymnasium cons because you get to see different people and different things there than you see at like the larger cons. Because to see like something that's like kind of unprofessional is fun.
Yeah, because larger cons always seem to sell the same stuff, unless there's like a couple.
It's
of
always
vendors
the
there.
Same.
Yeah, it's
vendors,
always the
yeah.
same. Yeah, it's always it's different vendors that sell the same stuff most of the time. Whereas you go to smaller cons, it's people that find stuff out of their storage bin that they've had. So it's like a general flea market, and sometimes you can walk out of there with something really good for hardly nothing.
Exactly, I can haggle. It's great. Like if I go to an anime con, I generally don't see used toy booths. Like I guess I see like cool shit like Northeast Comic Con. I don't get to see any other con.
I mean, honestly, like if you know this local convention does this again next year, like it probably is going to prompt me more to bring more stuff out of my storage closet to get rid of it. Like
they could, you should find a spot like this and just like just. Get a table, like pay like $10 and just sell your shit and just chat with people and just be like, don't make the same mistakes I did as you.
Be the most bitter person there and you're just like, you buying this? If you're not, get out.
That would be
I mean honestly, like I think San Jose Con is, I don't know like where how far Riverside is from like San Jose, but I know that's like another anime con that's like around California. There's like what was it, Anime Los Angeles is something that's coming up soon.
Everyone's trying to get a con started because there's a lot of money to be made. So
it is a quick startup venture for sure. Like if you want to like set it up as like a nonprofit LLC or something.
Exactly. No, that's why like if you can get hooked up with a college and just exploit them to because they get facilities for free and that's like half your cost right there.
Yeah.
It's great. You just need like committed people to do it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, because I'm kind of curious on how this is, like, if they do it again next year, like, how they may put more effort into it. I don't know. But, I mean, again, it's fun to see one of those things. It's, like, kind of like, you know, kind of like giggling and laughing at how, like, cute babies play in, like, the sandbox and how, like, they're, like, so engrossed in their own little world. And I think it's the most awesome thing ever, and that's kind of like... People that start these little small comic conventions up and they think it's the greatest thing ever, but it's like, you know, it's crap, but you know they're having fun at the same time.
Yeah, it's like trying to start a podcast and like record, and you think like you record for a few years and you think like you're making a good product, but in reality, you just have a single listener and no one gives a shit. I wish I could think of like a comparison for that.
I think you totally nailed the comparison there, Dan.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, honestly, you know, like, if they end up doing it next year, you should solicit them and say, like, hey, can I help you plan and do stuff and let me slap my, like, let me sponsor your
convention. My thing is, like, give me an area to show dumb Japanese cartoons and you have my attention.
Yeah, but you need the right licensing rights.
And if it's panel-wise, like a clip show, I don't think that's a problem, which that's something I can do.
Technically, you're supposed to. I mean, when high schoolers are running it, like, they don't know any better. They don't give a fuck. But
well, like, I'm not letting them run my stuff. I'm running my own stuff.
Well, I mean, like, if they're running, like, if there's, like, a responsible adult involved, they would probably be like, you need to get the rights. Like, my anime club wanted to show, like, a Studio Ghibli film for, like, this, like, freshman weekend thing. And I had to, when I heard about that, I was like, you guys know you have to pay for that, right? And you know, like, the film rights are over $1,000 probably, right? And they were like, what? Even though this subject had been brought up in the past and this had been explained before that this cannot happen. And, like, they were going to stream something off Crunchyroll, but Crunchyroll basically has no movies.
Yeah, it's mostly shows and, like,
they don't
shorts.
Even have Little Witch Academia anymore. Well, like, it's movie rights are more expensive than TV show rights for anime for whatever reason. It sucks, but it's hard. Because Crunchyroll lets you can get, like, a anime club subscription. Like, they'll give you, like, free rights as long as you have a legitimate Crunchyroll subscription and, like, report every few months what you watch. Which is a really cool service that they have.
Well, I mean, if I show a clip show, I can always say that's under fair use and then keep it under the fair use rules.
Yeah, like, that's true. Yeah. Or I could also just report...
Because I'm using it as...
Like, shows you're airing and report you to various license holders.
But then, like, it's... Like, there's certain policies on or rules for fair use, and as long as I'm like, well, this is for educational purposes. Because it's showing people what's out there. And
I think if you're not showing a full episode, I think you'd probably be fine.
No, it's not going to be a full episode. Like I said, it's a clip show.
I assume you actually own real physical copies of them, and you're not just like getting them off Kiss Anime or something, so that also helps.
I'm not getting anything off Kiss Anime, yeah. Alright. What were you about your rant.
Oh, so my tangent from, or the thing I forgot from my con is... when I went to Northeast Comic Con, this is the only con that I've ever gone to that sold blatantly bootleg merch. Like, they actually had bootleg DVDs, which, I mean, I know I assume Veku and Zionic have been to numerous cons where they sell stuff like that because they're older than me.
No, I don't think so, actually.
Because our agent, really?
I've seen some bootleg stuff here and there, but it's...
I guess, Veku, you probably go to bigger cons, so they probably are more likely to vet or, like, kick people out who do shit
it's
like
more,
that.
I think it's more restrictive or more police now on bootleg things than what it was, like, 20 years ago. But then again... Well, I think I'm like in the Cool Kids Club days. I went to like that one convention called South Carolina Anime Con, and I bought some anime CDs. And I was like, "Yeah, it's got this label on it." And Viku's like, "That's a bootleg." And I'm like, "What the hell?"
Yeah,
it was like some anime CDs I got.
Like some of their stuff was legitimate, but then I also saw they had a 10-disc Studio Ghibli DVD set that had like a like DeviantArt level. Like Totoro on the front.
Oh man.
And they also had or what really gave it away for me was they had a Ed and Eddie complete series DVD set, which I caught because they used the cover from the first DVD set and Cartoon Network only released the first two seasons on DVD. And the other thing that gave it away was the insert, instead of using like glossy paper, they just printed out like a standard 8.5 by 11 like paper, like they didn't use, like it just looked like they had just like
what? Wait, was that like the was that the paper. Episode list, and they just folded it up like 5 times and crammed it in there or something?
Well, like the colors were faded on it, so you could tell it's just a regular piece of paper instead of like a glossy paper or cardstock or something that differentiates like a regular piece of paper from like a DVD insert, like or a DVD cover insert. So
that kind of stuff's all over the place in Phoenix Comic Cons. Like they've got always the old Marvel movies, like the Doctor Strange TV movie and stuff like that.
Fantastic Four, the Roger Corman one.
Yeah, and all this Japanese stuff, the kind of stuff Cloud watches, that's like not been officially released here. You know, Kamen Rider and all that, and it's like really obvious always, but. And there are some booths that only sell that stuff, but somehow still come back every year.
Yeah, no, like that's what amazes me is that like I've seen bootleg vendors both times I've been to this con. So like I saw these my friend and I were looking at the booth, and I like immediately saw this and just started laughing. I was just like, Hannah, we need to like walk away, and I need to go to another booth for a second. And I was just like, you know, like everything there was fucking bootlegged, right? She was like, what? And then so we went back and they showed her the DVDs. And it was like the prints in the back. Like they were selling prints, and the prints are cool. Like once I saw the DVDs, I knew that it wasn't the original artist selling the prints. So I was like, fuck, I'm not going to buy their prints. But so I just went up to, like, I showed Eric the edit, and Eddie said, I was like, oh, look at that. They have a complete series set. I thought they only released the first two seasons of the show officially, and then just walked away.
Yeah, the right solution is to just, like, mock them in for the best.
I didn't, like, mean to intentionally, like, mock them. I just kind of, like, wanted to make, like, a comment so it didn't look like we were just kind of going there just, like, gawking at their booth. It's like, yeah, like, hee-hawing at them or something. But, like, in hindsight, like, that just is, like, a total dick move.
Well, I mean, they deserve it.
Yeah, they do deserve it for being assholes. Like, I pirate everything, but I don't try and make a money off it, you know?
Maybe that should be how you utilize your business major.
Nah,
make money off of all your pirated stuff.
Why? That's stupid. I'm not going to go to fucking jail for selling fucking Class of 3000 and Time Squad DVD.
Class of 3000 value out,
and then you can do the rival off with him.
Oh man, I'll trade you my Da Boom Crew DVDs for all 13 episodes of Coconut Fred's Fruit Salad Island. Got it, man. Just like trade, like, it's just like a dime bag with just like a fucking shitty DVD in it.
Oh man, you got like a Game Boy Advance video.
Daft, you gotta throw in some super duper sumos, and I think we made the deal.
The worst
sweet.
Part is, I actually referenced, my friend was posting the other day, like, I have 2 days off from work. What anime should I marathon? And I put that show as a response.
Super duper sumos.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you mentioned the Da Boom Crew.
Yeah. To all our listener out there, if you can help me get a full series rip of But Ugly Martians hooking the go up. I can't find a full series rip, and it's very frustrating. I've only been able to find like half the episodes.
Daft, do you know if I Am Weasel is available online somewhere, like the final season?
I think they put out DVDs in Europe. I think I have like a region 3 or region 4 DVD rip. Let me check. I'll actually know this isn't on this hard drive. I think I have it. I know where you can get it. Let me rephrase that. I obviously do not have any pirated content, particularly that sold by Anime of Yesteryear's prime sponsor, Right Stuff. What did you guys get
about Anime Cart? Gundam 0080, I think, was the most recent thing.
Yeah, we should be getting 0083 sometime soon.
Hey, Zion, like, do you want to talk about the first 8 episodes of G-Reco?
I figured we save that when we talk about our for the big Gundam stuff, because I figured we try to watch some of Try, and then we can kind of compile that in the same episode.
I hear it sucks.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I know that Cloud and Josh dropped it after like 2 episodes.
I mean, I saw the first episode, and I didn't really want to continue after that. I just kind of like, oh, I'll get back to it, and I didn't. Mm-hmm. But I figured, like, if we give the first disc a try, we can talk about both of those.
I'm just more interested in G-Reco, because I haven't even seen the original Build Fighters, and I don't know if they're related, or...
Okay.
If those shows even have, like, a continuing plot, or are they just model commercials?
Well, I have no idea, so...
No.
It kind
of
takes...
You liked the first season of Build Fighters, right?
Yeah, that was good. I mean, I thought Try was more like, it took place after, like, a few years after the original series.
Okay.
Do we have anything else for closing remarks? Because I was just going to give shout-outs to people that passed away.
No, I think we can do like a 2016 memorial here, I guess.
Yeah,
I want to give a shout-out to Death. Death did a pretty good job this year.
Death from Above 79.
Yeah, well, that's a band reference, dude. Come on, not even trying. Jeez. Oh, wait. Yeah, Death from Above 1979 is a two-piece. They put out a record on Vice Records. It's really fucking good.
I was just remembering when Zionic asked who is Death. The name.
Who is Death? Who? Shout out to Dan the Norseman.
And then you like got him to leave or something. That was what I remember.
Oh, what? Did I just like tell him he had to leave after that?
Well, one of your accounts told the other one to leave or something like that.
Because oh, yeah.
One of them was being a jerk to Zionic or something. I don't remember the exact scenario.
I do not remember any of this at all. I don't know, like, my thing on my mind was, like, I wanted to give a shout-out to, rest in peace, Alan Thicke, because he had his awesome talk show in the 80s that didn't last long, but I had a banging intro song, I will say. And then it was the dad in the Growing Pains, and he was a spokesperson for, Cinco Marketing and those, Tim and Eric episodes, like the Cinco Napple.
To go back to Alan Thicke quickly, do you think being 6 feet under, like being under 6 feet of dirt, is a thick layer? Yes or no?
It could be thicker.
Ooh.
Bazinga.
Are you going to make some George Michael jokes next, Steph?
I don't even like. I saw people in my Facebook feed being upset that George Michael died, but I genuinely don't think anyone around my millennial age range actually knows who George Michael is.
Yeah, my only thing is, and I said this on Twitter, was like, well, it looks like George Michael celebrated his last Christmas.
Yeah! Yeah, like, I don't even think I've never really. I don't think I've ever heard that song. Or at least
no. How could you not know what Last Christmas is? It plays every single year.
I'm sure I would recognize it if I heard it, but
overplayed.
If that song
since it first
played,
came
I would
out.
Not know it was a George Michael song.
Well, it's technically it's Wham.
Did he sing that when he was still part of Wham?
I don't know what Wham does.
Well, it used to be a band. It used to be two guys that sung Jitterbug or... What starts with? I don't even know what okay, and then...
Pick Me Up Before You Go-Go.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, I've heard... Yeah, I've...
Or Wake Me Up. I don't know.
Okay, I just listened to a little bit of Last Christmas. I vaguely recognize it. Like, again, I didn't know about it as a Wham song.
Okay. Now, did you know that some of the characters in JoJo are based on bands?
I did. Shout out to Dan of Steel.
Wait, is there a Wham character in JoJo's? I would assume so.
There must be.
Yeah, there is.
Does at least one of them look like George Michael? At least 80s hair George Michael?
I don't think he does. The name is always totally unconnected to the character. It's just a random band that Araki was thinking of at the time.
Alright, Daft, are you familiar with Careless Whisper, at least?
Again, like, I'm sure I've heard it.
It starts out with the saxophone. It's the saxophone solo song, maybe. Maybe that's how you
recognize
it.
Oh, it's that one?
Yeah, it's that one. Da, 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 da,
oh, okay.
Da, da. Yeah, that's Careless Whisper.
Yeah, I didn't even realize I had vocals. I've just seen, like, the video set to Careless Whisper.
Yeah.
Like, with Fastos doing the saxophone in public. But I didn't actually know that song had vocals.
See, the thing is, I think most people just know George Michael from, like, the three songs we just mentioned, which was Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go, Last Christmas, and Careless Whisper, because that's all I have been ever hearing on the radio for, like, 20 years. And sometimes they play you Faith, and that's it.
Yeah,
It seems like Twitter was celebrating him more so because of his sexuality than anything else.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah, not really so much as...
He's mostly known for being a deviant, essentially. And, like, if he existed, like, if he did that stuff today, no one would probably really care because it's 2016.
Yeah.
That's why Ghost was mocking him. At the same time, he was mad at people who were doing those shout-out names. He was like, you know, he's responsible for all the glory holes today.
I wasn't sure how Ghost was gonna take George Michael. I would assume he probably wouldn't like him, but I wouldn't know.
I'm sure he sang for a bit.
No, he didn't. He should have.
That was surprising.
They'll keep harping on it until he does.
Yeah.
Until someone else dies in the next 3 days, and then they'll care about that person more.
I think he rage quit early because of the sick. Stories that people are reading about Christmas.
Of course.
Like the one where Bernie Sanders, Eeyore, and Pooh had an orgy. That was the one that made him rage quit.
That's an interesting combo.
Yeah.
What does HFIL stand
for? Home for Infinite Losers from Dragon Ball.
the censored hell language in Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah.
But the fact that they're that creative on an acronym makes that even more iconic, I think.
Uh-huh. They even used that up until GT in the dub.
Oh, nice.
So now that Dragon Ball Super is finally airing on Toonami, is it so? I think we finally reached the peak of Toonami. So
JT's guess... like, why aren't they airing GT first? Because he didn't see it when they aired it 12 years ago.
Did they get to the point in Kai where JT had watched up to in Dragon Ball Z?
He finally finished Z before Kai started airing because he wasn't sure if it was a sequel or not, I think.
I get it. Oh my god. Fuck that guy. But yeah, so I think we've reached peak Toonami because at this point there's basically no show that they can really get that would be like amazing. Like, unless they somehow aired like Attack on Titan Season 2 before it came out in Japan or something, like by a lot or something. There's not really like. Or they made like a 100% wholly owned anime like IGPX that actually was
okay,
good.
Peak Toonami for me is like if they've got a Gundam show on there, Dragon Balls, whatever. Oh, well, yeah, I know. But then also they bring back like a Tenchi show or something. Like to me, that is peak.
By peak Toonami, I mean like there is basically no other acquisition they could get that could match Dragon Ball Super.
Sailor Moon?
I think that's just talking in terms of like ratings. I mean, Tenchi GX.
Yeah, I'm just saying like ratings are buzz in the anime.
I mean, like if they bring, like if they can get like the Tenchi Muyo like OVAs or one of the like, well, no, it's too old.
The War on Geminar.
Yeah, anime fans don't even know what that is.
Current anime fans today, probably not so much, yeah.
Yeah, I can guarantee you, I could walk into my and be like, hey, who knows what Tenchi Muyo is? And maybe one of them would raise their hand.
I would imagine they would try to get Berserk or something, like the new Berserk series.
Oh, they can't air that.
No one cares about... Berserk isn't that popular.
There's too much nudity.
There's
too much nudity in it, the rape horror scene. They can't air that.
And it's all CGI, so that'll turn off quite a few people.
It was a horrible adaptation. They shouldn't air it anyway.
Yeah, I doubt DeMarco would let it air, in part because of that. But yeah, I mean, like...
It was, like, universally hated by Berserk fans, so they won't even be getting them to watch it. I mean, I don't know if I can watch it again. It's bad enough watching it once.
Yeah, like, maybe if they got... I don't even know what they could do to, like, get anything as big of a pop as that. I mean, like, they have Samurai Jack airing next year, assuming that airs on Toonami. FLCL2 will be big, but that's not, like, Dragon Ball Super level. Maybe if they did a revival of Mega's XLR, that would be
the only thing. Well, they do have, a whole year of Dragon Ball Final Chapters airing next to Super... So that's a guaranteed year of very high ratings for the first hour of the block. That's not something to sneeze at, you know? I mean, this is as good as they're going to get. You're right. They have Dragon Ball Z, Naruto, One Piece, all the big shows on there. One Punch Man is still on there. JoJo's on the center.
No, here's what they need.
They're, they're doing very well.
Guys, they need to bring back Totally Spies.
Totally Spies is... Well, Martin Mystery is definitive anime. Oh, do you guys know how much... Do you guys remember Team Galaxy?
That's the story about how Cartoon Network paid a bunch for it.
So that was from Marathon, which made Totally Spies. I couldn't pull up the press release. I forgot how this came up in discussion a while ago. But they paid around $16 to $18 million for the acquisition rights to the show.
And they aired it
for a month on Megusi and then immediately shit-canned it.
I think they aired it on a Sunday night with Tom and Betty for maybe a month or
not.
Two.
Well, they aired.
And it was like a total flop.
Well, they did like a girl centric block with Atomic Betty, which was a Teletoon show, The Life of Times of Juniper Lee, which was a Cartoon Network original, and maybe Totally Spies aired there. I bet they probably aired Powerpuff Girls around it. It was an interesting idea, but it didn't really catch on.
Yeah, they kept trying to appeal to girls with stuff like that in Megusi, and it was just a total flop for CN.
I mean, I have quite a few friends who vividly talk about Code Lyoko and stuff like that.
Oh, jeez.
Well, I guess that's.
I don't know why they talk vividly about that, but because it's not great, but it's a very interesting concept. But like,
there's something about that mid 2000 CGI that's like so horrible. It's so transfixing.
I want to try Rebels, but I'm just so turned off by TV CGI for the most part.
I mean, the only show that was TV CGI, I mean, this is early, is like Reboot. Like, Reboot was a good show.
Reboot, like, that's like saying, like, I liked Beast Wars, Transformers when I was a kid, but if I watch that now, I'd be like, oh my god, what is wrong with my eyes? Are my eyes broken?
I might still enjoy Reboot, so.
Yeah,
you just have to be able to appreciate it. That's the thing. You can't be judging it by modern standards.
Yeah, you have to look at it with, like, you have to imagine yourself being, like, 10 years old in your feety pajamas and, like, eating cereal or whatever.
Having
idly thinking about a future, about all of the things you will do in the future and how your life will be amazing, and then the episode ends, and then you're 30 years old and your life has nowhere to go but downhill.
That cut off mostly, but I think I'm glad it did.
Yeah, it was pretty depressing, but it will be on the recording.
Fantastic.
Your words are heard.
I just heard, like, and then you're thinking about, and then it comes back, and it's, your life has nowhere to go but down. And it's like, okay, it's another Daft rant.
Yeah, exactly.
Essentially. Are we ready to shut this down?
Yeah.
Can I do my closing remark?
Yeah, we're still in closing remark.
All right, fantastic. This remark is from Peter's Fay.
Oh boy!
And it reads all. And I will note this is in all caps. All beggars in the streets of NYC should be rounded up and shot. Fuck sympathy.
Coming from someone who's also a beggar as well, or begging and whoring for attention.
Here's the hashtag, fun fact. Almost all the voice actors I currently follow are female and work in anime. What does this say about me? From Peter S. Fay. Peter has become weeaboo.
I suppose so. I'm trying to go through the other tweets that I saw recently. Yeah. Oh, he tweeted at UPS Jobs, I was wrongfully terminated from the LIC warehouse and have been placed on negative rehire for no reason. Please advise.
I can't believe he won't call them up, but he has to, like, go through Twitter to see if they'll respond to him, and they're not.
Yeah, that's pretty... I mean, I guess for someone with social, like with Peter's social skills, I guess using Twitter is probably a more effective medium than calling them on the phone.
I know, but calling them is a more professional way. Go ahead.
What in the world is up with all these Twitter accounts based on anime characters? My notification tab is beginning to lose originality.
Can we actually do a year in review with Peter? We talked about doing that one year, and we should actually do it this year.
I think we've been talking about doing that for a lot longer than that.
Probably multiple years.
Yes. Every year we make the same claim. Like, we're going to do it to a year in review. This is it. This is totally it. And then, like, nothing.
I know, but we kept
delaying it, and you were like, oh, we're going to do a Valentine's Day special with him.
That was like two Valentine's Days ago.
Well, no, but I want to hear about Peter's various run-ins on basic cable, because he was on the talk show The Chew. He was on Impractical Jokers. I think he said he was on one or two other programs, but we need to figure that out.
Yeah,
I don't know what's worse, the fact that he was on Impractical Jokers or the fact that I am seriously considering skimming through numerous episodes of Impractical Jokers to see which episode he was on, so we can get a copy of the episode and keep it as a part of our Peter archive.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Like, if you just watch the show and put it on mute and just watch it visually, you can probably get through it better, I would assume.
I mean, I'd have to watch it at 2x speed on mute. And hope
well, it will get you through the episode,
like,
quicker.
Segments or something. Yeah, like, honestly, I fucking hate prank shows like that. I hate pranksters, and I generally hate pranksters. I've seen like half an episode of it when I was at my friend's house, and he refused to give up the remote because he was so stoned that he didn't. He just he got really mad when we started trying to take the remote from him, or didn't do something he didn't want to do. So we were subject to that, and it was 15 minutes of my life I would like back.
All right, I think I'm going to shut this down because I got to get up early in the morning.
VQ, do you have any closing remarks?
Oh, yeah, go ahead, VQ.
No. Anime sucks. That's it.
Shut that. Oh, everyone should be watching
Keito. Excuse me, it's anime is to suck.
Right, yeah.
to bring back an old C-Lab reference.
Adult Swim meme.
Yeah, Adult Swim meme.
$3 million extreme. Everyone watch Keijo. Keijo's best.
So for my closing remark on the thing about Wham and JoJo, he was one of the pillar men from Part 2.
Okay.
With AC/DC and Cars. And so okay. You'll see that on Toonami soon, Xenic. I know you haven't seen Part 2 yet. So I'm sure that when that airs, people are going to be on Twitter saying, oh no, it's making me think of George Michael. 2016 was so
terrible.
That's
so offensive that they referenced George Michael in this show after his death. That's spitting on his good name or some bullcrap like that. You know they're going to say that.
We'll see some terrible tweets that Cloud will post in the chat from those people.
Yeah. Like the show came out 4 years ago.
Okay, general discussion. If you had to ban... Pick one to ban from the chat, JT or Cloud, and say why for your reasoning.
I'm not going to ban them.
Well, I'm saying as a hypothetical, like if you were forced to ban one of them.
I've already chosen my person that I banned, and that was NIV. I'm not banning anyone else. Don't worry, Piku.
You've abused your power, so to speak.
Yeah, I've done that enough, yeah.
I was, like, trying to be diplomatic about it, and then you just went ahead and did it, and I was like, well, that's that.
So the answer was Cloud. Okay, I'll let him know.
Honestly, I'd rather keep Cloud than JT.
I think maybe JT, honestly, but different days.
Different
days.
Cloud's posts are so bad.
It's close. Yeah, it's close.
The tweets.
Here's the thing. Like, I can talk to Cloud more. JT just comes in there with the blinders completely on and just starts typing whatever he feels like. Regardless.
Cloud does the same thing too,
regardless. Though. No, but the Cloud is like, you kind of respond and he'll give you some response back. JT is just like, yeah, whatever. This is better for me. YouTube video, DBZ video.
I think Cloud has
three
more
freaking hours.
I think at the end of the day, I think Cloud has more subject variety than JT.
Yeah, it seems more relevant,
like,
actually.
Himself off over his fandom, so I think I would have to give the edge to Cloud as well.
Cloud is always posting stuff that nobody understands, but JT just posts like stupid news stories, so
no,
I'm not sure what's
better. So Cloud posts stuff that, no, we don't understand it, but we can easily understand it. JT, I don't know what the heck. Even even JT is confused by the things he posts. Sometimes, like, we'll mention something,
true,
oh, and he'll be like, oh, what's that? I don't know what you're talking about. .. What .. is that .. that?
I wonder how much of... never mind. I'm not going to finish that statement. But
I know a lot of the time I ask Cloud about the tweet, like, what does this mean and what are they trying to say? And he's like, I don't know.
Yeah, I've never understood that. Why he puts some of this stuff in here and he doesn't even... Like, it's like... He's just like the messenger, but he doesn't even... It's really weird. I don't know why someone would do that. Cloud, they're both really bad. I mean, and it seems like they're getting worse with time, to be honest. Like, if you come in here during when DBZ is airing, it's just like the most autistic thing. It's terrible. But then, you know, and then Cloud will be right there with like 10 tweets about Donald Trump or something, and it's like, you know, you can't win. There's no wrong answer to this question.
It's either Precure, Donald Trump stuff, or that other guy, what, Pancake Paradox. It's one of those three, or all three at the same time.
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, and I get the feeling that they'll just keep doing this forever, even if we ignore them and don't respond. It's like they don't even care because they're not even talking to anyone in particular. They're just kind of like posting in the Slack the way that they would post like on Twitter, basically. You know, it's not directed at anyone. It's not supposed to ignite a conversation. Well, where they're just like talking to themselves.
The thing is, like, I get more engaged with the stuff Cloud posts because I'm the one that gets pissed off by like whatever he finds. Whereas for JT, I read none of it. I read absolutely none of anything he says. Like, I don't care what it is. I know he's posting up like five different versions of a freaking song from Dragon Ball Z that I didn't even know about it existed, which I don't even care anyways, but he still posts this up. Like, it's important or something.
Yeah, but like, look at all of these blind boxes, what shit these people got in blind boxes that I didn't get. Because
I got
Zenion's finest live action films for 78 cents shit.
Was JT
when he watches movies and comments on them, even though he's the only one watching it, that's always good. It's like stuff we've never even heard of, too. It's like, I wouldn't even know what to say if I don't even know what this is.
Zeon, can I make a pitch to you?
You're going to do it anyways.
Let's recruit for the chat through your podcast. Let's recruit all the listener, and we'll make like a Google form and just have them either like put in an application or have them like answer a test or riddles or something to join the chat. In part because I like the idea, because I have too much free time and I would enjoy putting together such a ridiculous, awful, like torturous application for someone to fill out. But also it would be nice to have some new blood to drown out JT.
So you want me to help you recruit somebody else for the chat to replace JT in the chat?
No, I'm trying to get you to recruit more people to parrot, or I'm trying to get you to recruit your followers so you have more people who can suck up to you and also get rid of JT.
Well, it's just replacing JT, but like with something either better or much worse.
Exactly.
And
either of those would be great options.
Okay. Look, here's the way I look at it. Like, I'd rather keep the evil and the nasty that we know instead of trying to get something and then, like, it turns out it might be even worse.
So Zeon Akaitza's listener, that's what I thought. All right, let's end the show.
Screw you, that's not it. All right.
It kind of sounds like it.
I wouldn't mind if we got the
No, I'm trying on. To... I mean, honestly, do you really... Can you really look from an outside perspective and be like, does anybody else new need to come into our chat room and be subject to everything that we talk about?
Well, why not? I mean the problem it's not like they can ruin it.
I mean, yeah. They already but know we could ruin them. I mean, I think that Cody listens to like the whole of every episode.
He hasn't commented in a while, but he might like... still be listening. I'm not sure.
Or maybe he died.
Nah,
maybe he's going to hear what we said about JT, around. And he's going to be like, Zeon, I think I'm worse than that, and now I'm going to quit listening.
Maybe he died from boredom from listening to you guys so much.
That wouldn't surprise me.
You know, I was about to say that.
He's like, why is this episode 3 hours? They stopped talking about Star Wars 2.5 hours ago.
Well, this is why I had time codes to stuff. It's like, if you want to listen to Star Wars,
autistic people.
It's like I had time codes in the show notes. It's like, okay, here's where we talk about Star Wars. After that, it's up to your own discretion. But it's within this time code.
We could just cut off the entire part about Claude and JT, and it would be for the good of our listeners, I think.
I mean, I think listening to any second of this is a waste of oxygen and life.
Yeah.
But I mean, in all honesty, Zeonic, I don't think it's a terrible idea to recruit. All right, more people.
I will consider it. I'll think about it.
Like, the chat's been good the past few days because Veku and TY have been posting, and I've also been posting a little bit more because I've had more free time. No, you're welcome. But it would be nice to be able to open up the chat and not just see JT's ramblings.
All right.
Yeah.
I was surprised he was watching Case Closed in Japanese. I think that was the first time he's watched an anime in Japanese.
I didn't know he could read.
I remember, like, maybe a year or two ago, someone mentioned subs to him, and he was like, subs? ? Like, he had never heard the idea of people watching anime in Japanese.
Jesus Christ.
He came into like the chat like several hours after we had been talking about Carrie Fisher, and he just like posted like Carrie Fisher died, like as if that was breaking news. I was like, "What are you talking about?" And he didn't take the bait. And I was really disappointed. He stopped talking about Big Bang for a while and changed to a different subject. Yeah, no, he started talking about Big Bang Theory. Well, you should have said that. I was trying to tie it into the end to make bring it back to Star Wars. But I guess Big Bang Theory is close enough.
Well, this is too depressing. Let's talk about Big Bang Theory. Oh, man.
Big Bang Theory is
nine different versions of the same Bruce Falconer song. I got to post all of them here. Oh. All right, for real. I'm going to stop this.
All right. Yeah, stop the recording. But right.
I was going to say Happy New Year. Thanks for listening, whoever made it this far. As a precaution, if anyone did make it this far, so
please seek professional help.
Yeah, what he said. If you need, please contact 1-800-273-8255. They're available 24 hours every day. So please, please call that number if you seek assistance.
Is that the suicide hotline?
What is that?
Yes.
I was hoping you're going to post Tim Box's phone number or something.
I don't have that anymore. I hung out with Emily a few months back, and she still had his number in her contacts. I'm like, why do you still have this?
Because she needs to talk about dinosaurs or someone.
I mean, she could talk to her brother. Her brother is essentially Tim Box. I went over her house around that same time frame, and I saw his train set. Or his Emily's room became Eric's train room. And this train set's pretty dang.
Was he wearing a Gumby outfit?
No, he was not. But he came into the room at one point and was talking to me about how the train made realistic sounds and was listening off of specific parts.
Sounds like a tanky.
I need to stop this recording right now. Still working on it. Hang on. Speakers.
I put Deepu on here just in case he logs on.
Can you guys
on,
hear me?
I don't think he's going to.
If you can hear me.
Yes, we hear you.
I forgot that I need to fix my audio settings as well.
I hear a lot of you in my audio settings. So you're loud enough. You're good to go, Chief.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
Okay, cool. All
right.
I forgot... I hadn't plugged my mic into my computer since I got it back, so it fault put the speakers at the mic as well.
So okay, hold on. Let me fill my water.
Yeah, I need to fill mine as well and find my headphones to properly record.
Yeah, let me look at my half a bottle of water. I think it should last me for the podcast, so I'm good.
Look, I'm conflicted because... I wanted to move files, but I want my mouse, and I also need my mic to record. And I don't have a USB hub, so I think I'm just going to deal.
Well, okay. Are you able to just set up moving files and then... Oh, shoot. No, you can't because you need those ports open. All right,
well,
never mind.
Well, I'm trying to move from external to external because I got that 8 terabyte, so I've been trying to recycle that.
How much was your 8 terabyte?
230, I think.
That sounds
usually
about right.
I try and pay only 100 per 4 gigs, but I caved and got the 8 terabyte because I plan on keeping that for a while.
Okay.
What does that do? Like, you can't record and move files at the same time or something?
And a mouse.
Oh. Yeah. Well, how many more files do you have to move? Like hundreds? It's
priorities.
Thousands?
I think he left.
he's got better things to do with his files.
Huh, do I want to move my high-def Outlaw Star and Animu over to a new hard drive, or do I want to talk about Star Wars? The choices in life...
Watch Outlaw Star because it's too old.
Even though it's in like high-def or will be in high-definition, depending on the Japanese release on that, I don't know.
There's the UK Blu-ray that came out.
Oh, nice.
And Funny is just sitting on it. They licensed it 3 or 4 years ago, along with a bunch of other Sunrise stuff, and they just have done nothing with it. And same with ADV. They got, like, Big O and Better Man, and they're just doing nothing. At least Funny finally released Code Geass, but, you know, otherwise they've just been, like, doing nothing with all the Sunrise stuff they got. I don't get what the deal is with that.
I think a lot of fans don't get what their deal is either, so.
Yeah. Daft, you there? Maybe he's waiting till we actually start talking about Star Wars to say anything.
Alright. Forget him in the distance.
He's in the wind tunnel again.
He's in his own wind tunnel. I mean, do I feel like this should be our intro to our podcast and just save it as a zinger? I'm conflicted on that.
Just Daft, like, shouting from the distance.
Oh, yeah, I saw you, Star... It's like, yeah, I saw you, Star Wars. You know, how's my mic? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Did you hear us making fun of you?
No, I thought Zionic was genuinely asking that.
No.
I was mocking you.
I had my fucking... I couldn't get any audio because it was going onto my Yeti.
What's that Mason quote about audio?
Oh, that's like...
audio?
That's just that murmuring there.
It's like, rut, same audio.
Beth, did you know the Tune Radio is finally back?
I'll be back in a second.
Okay. Yeah, he finally aired our Gun in the Origin 3 episode last Thursday.
I thought he was like 5
even
episodes
episode
behind.
4 is already out.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's right. 3 was like in the summer. I like how you asked that, and then he's like, I'll be right back. And I'm like, crap.
He's like, I gotta go listen to Tune Radio.
He can't hear me say my comment on, oh, looks like the $130 is paying off, huh? He joshes on us all the time.
Yeah, I was talking to him on Slack, and he was like saying that Mason didn't follow a single part of that so-called contract.
Of course not.
Yeah.
And Mason wasn't gonna follow through anyways. He's like, I don't give a fuck.
And then Mason was like, he cared so little about like that contract that he was like saying to us that he could testify in court against them or something. At one point, he just said something like that. Even after they gave him all that money.
Dude, Mason can fuck off and die.
How are you gonna get your money back if he does that?
I don't care. I need to actually...
He's going to break into his house and roll it.
I need to figure out how I can write that off on my tax return for next year.
Charitable donation to the homeless.
Yeah, actually, no, I should just send, actually, no, I should do, I should send, like, Mason the tax form and make him sign it for me.
This is a Toon Radio contract extension?
No, wait, no, I'm just gonna say, like, I'm writing that expense off, because I viewed it as a charitable expense. And technically, he has an LLC, I may be able to actually get away with writing it off.
Yeah.
Radio's
registered as a charity, though.
You're using the same loopholes Trump does in our taxes, so Godspeed.
Audio out of us.
Your audio sounds fine, man. I don't know, like...
Why?
Just saying.
Wait, how the fuck is audio coming out of there? That's interesting. Okay.
There we go. I think I fixed this. For some reason, my audio was actually coming out of my headphone, or my mic, which was weird.
Oh.
It must have, like, an internal speaker in it or something.
I guess. I didn't realize that.
Can you guys hear my mom shampooing the carpet?
I hear a noise in the back. I don't know what that is, but...
Okay. Is it gonna, like... mess with the recording?
No, it sounds too low. I mean, like, shoot, we've done recordings with you freaking bird calling for 3 hours, so, like, who cares if your mom's shampooing the carpet? It sounds a whole lot lower than that, our mascot.
Like, honestly, I wouldn't have noticed it unless you had pointed it out.
Yeah, really.
Okay. I'm gonna try it again with the door open and see if you notice it now.
Yeah, that's much louder.
Yeah, that's definitely noticeable.
Can you hear it, or is the noise being reduced by the Mac?
No, yeah, it sounds... Definitely... Shut the darn door. There you go.
Okay, so you can hear it now?
Yes.
Okay, I wasn't sure if the Mac was reducing it or if it was just the door.
I think Veku's joining. I think he's just trying to connect.
Oh, he's trying to connect? Okay.
On my other Mac, there was under system settings, like a noise reduction thing. I don't know if I have that turned on this or not. I'll see if I can... Yeah, I guess that's not an option on this one. Maybe it just does it automatically, but not very well.
Yeah, you just gotta play with it, I assume. Mm.
You might still be trying to get set up.
Yeah.
I see his icon.
He just logged in and out.
Nice. He's typing. Please hold for the microwave.
Okay.
Whatever that means.
I don't know what that means.
Is he bringing a microwave into the podcast?
If I thought it was just his general...
Oh, no, I heard the beep in this background, so I guess he's using a microwave.
Oh.
Making them tendies, Veku?
Making them easy, Max? Oops.
Get them good boy points.
Hey, maybe he got that chicken from that, what was it, that redneck kid video you showed us? Or the Noah's Food Review, where he's like, I like these chicken tots, chickens I got at the Walmart.
Oh, that guy's awesome. Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. I mean, I'm just assuming Veku went to KFC or Popeyes or something.
Yep. How'd you know?
I just got it. I got this shit on Fleek, fam.
Sorry, it's gonna be...
Come here, Logan.
You're gonna have to be muted a lot of the time. But
it's okay. Alright. No, that's good.
There's not really too much to say anyway about it, right?